Hi, welcome to a special episode of the Technocrat Live. It's a panel. We've gotten some of our previous guests onto the Technocrat, and we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. Some of the stuff that was a little too hairy to touch one-on-one. So stay tuned. This is going to be good. So I just wanted to reintroduce you to everybody. We have Joe, Arnie, and Rich today. Joe is a software engineer and an SRE DevOps consultant. Arnie is a physicist and the CEO of Poem Technologies, and Rich is a programmer and a small business owner. Welcome, guys. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
This is totally impromptu. So these guys came through at the last minute, and I really appreciate this, and I think it's actually going to be something. This is something I wanted to do, but I think it's going to be really special. I just wanted to say there was a couple of things that we had agreement on, so that everybody agreed on. You can stop me if you think this is wrong. So the first thing that everybody agreed on in every show so far was that the cameras are growing and nothing can stop it. Does anybody think that that's untrue, or now's the time, because some of the premise of these questions is based on these things we're agreeing about?
I think it's definitely true.
Yeah,
and it's a problem, actually.
Right? Yeah. So, not everybody agreed whether it was a problem or whether it was okay, but everybody agreed you can't stop it.
It's an area open for abuse.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's open for abuse, but I also think it can enhance security as well in certain places.
Well, I kind of am with you. I think that it's cameras are great for catching liars.
Yeah.
Of course, the problem is we have to become more relaxed as a society and more accepting of people making mistakes.
No, I think everybody could walk around with a Guy Fawkes mask on.
We may get there.
It may. I mean, it used to be used to be that wearing a mask in public, not on Halloween, was a crime.
Right.
Because who does that?
Right. Well, part of that, I think, is, religious tolerance, but at the same time, when do religions get exceptions to common rules, right? You get a religious exception to, and it becomes like this culture fort where you can do whatever you want. If you can just add things into your culture fort, then you don't have to play by the rules everybody else does. And what's the problem when you get a lot of forts? You get a war. So I don't want to see a culture war. So that's why I completely agree with you. It really bugs me. So that was, I didn't think that was going to turn into a debate, but that was awesome. You guys have the idea.
Well, and who's pushing it the hardest? It's, Chinese technology is pushing it the hardest.
Right, right. Well, they have their whole country on lockdown.
But state security services in other states are buying that technology.
Right.
That's exactly who you don't want to have the stuff.
Right.
The secret police.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. Right. And they're the people who are going to abuse it the worst. I think a lot of...
So, by the way, this is not my real face.
I just saw an article, I think yesterday, that MIT did this thing. If you hang like a it's a picture of a 2D image. It looks kind of like a Monet painting. The AI can't tell that you're a person. So you hang this like little thing, and so they're starting to make T-shirts with this image on it to confuse the AI.
Right.
Okay. Well, so I gotta get used to leaning into the mic. Usually I'm on a lapel mic, but that's okay. I don't mind. I agree with you guys, and I think about the risk. I think what I really think is that this is a lot of the privacy push. This is my conspiracy theory version of things. A lot of this privacy push is that it's people with money who just don't want. People with money and power who don't want their private lives exposed. I think a lot of the people who are not on the middle class and above, a lot of people who are middle class and lower, they just don't have any privacy anymore. I mean, it's gone already. It's gone in their house. I mean, imagine, as a quick example, just so it's not hyperbole and I'm not just creating a straw man. Imagine you give your kid an iPad. It's a couple generations old, but it works. It plays all the latest apps. And they come and they start playing Pokemon Go in your house, looking for Pokemons. This is like the horror of the technocracy come to roost. Now there is at least one company out there with a complete map of your house.
Roombas also used to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They stopped that. Yeah, they stopped that.
They emailed it back.
Roombas would make a map of your house.
And send it back.
Right.
To the Chinese.
But of course,
not the Chinese.
at 4 o'clock on a Friday.
That's feng shui for you.
Yeah, and so you know, this is the reason why I think specifically the wealthier. But the irony is, of course, they're the ones who sometimes use the biggest, latest tech gadgets. I saw a great example online where somebody was talking about automated lawnmowers, robotic lawnmowers.
Yeah.
You know, and not only are they taking pictures, but that thing could kill you, right? If somebody hijacks it, you know. And so they have this automated, because they don't want the lawn people over at their house, you know. And now they have an automated lawnmower, and you know, not only can it spy on you, but if somebody decides they've had it with your, if some technocrat decides they've had it with your BS. You know, I can do that.
I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, Nassau County had all of the floor plans of every house online. So you could go in and you could see your house, what it looked like at, according to their books.
Right.
And then they took it offline. It was on about 3 or 6 months.
New York City had that too. You just had to know how to look. Because yeah. I remember when I was looking
But they've all taken that offline.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. It was only on about three to six months, I forget how long it was on.
Well, at least with a floor plan, you know, your social security number isn't going to be on a sheet laying on the stairs or on a table or something.
Well, it was just
a kid runs by with his Pokemon Go.
Right. It was a blueprint type of thing.
Right, yeah.
But look, it's a tension between, because those blueprints are public when you file plans, right? So you could go down to town hall and look at them.
Right, but
there's a difference. It's similar. Once you make a huge amount of information public, then the things start to change.
I mean, like when I first moved into my house, it was broken into by some kids who worked at some fast food place that we ordered food from, and as you're paying, they're checking out your house and they put it on their list. And they did like 250 houses in the neighborhood. Now if they had the floor plans, they'd go, oh, let's see how the, you know, let's case the joint before.
Right. I totally see what you're saying, and there's exploitability there for sure.
Yeah.
Also, one thing everyone agreed on was that remote exploits with no patch path is a monstrous problem. And this is becoming a civilization ending level problem. And, they didn't say that specifically, but that's me saying
that. It's the same thing.
I think it is. I think it's a civilization ending problem. We could die as a species if this goes perfectly wrong. Well,
some of the biggest DNS attacks came from unpatched IoT devices that were taken over, you know?
Right.
And it's like,
you know. Everyone's just like, everyone views the internet through their own lens. Just like my favorite example of that is if you're driving a car and you have a fender bender, no big deal. I'll call the insurance company. Do the same thing with a motorcycle. He's dead.
Right.
You know? And so it's like the same kind of thing. Like, my computer's down. My kids can't play Fortnite for a few days. Who cares? They don't realize the utilities they depend on are actually using that internet to transmit information between power stations to keep the freaking grid up. And who knows how many people's lives are depending minute by minute on that grid.
Right.
So, I like your example. Does anybody see this as not a civilization-ending problem? I mean, just to bring it to this natural extreme.
Well, even
potentially civil. Obviously, we might just get lucky.
Well, if you take it another step further, if I go out and buy a car today, and what's the lifespan of that car being updated with software? 5 years? 10 years?
Right.
And then the car company says, well, it's not worth it my time to update it. And now we have a car that's after it's 9 years old, they can't get the thing fixed anymore.
Right.
You know,
yeah, that's absolutely true, and it's a shame because you know it almost predicates not everybody uses everything isn't just a toaster. Sometimes people like their machines, like their property, think they're beautiful, think that they're worth keeping around, might want to pass it down to the family. Forget that; that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know. And, you know, every car that's, you know, maybe there were some cars in the 90s that looked like just junk, but there were definitely some nice cars out there that should stay around forever, and they can't, because they have these CAN buses and these crazy devices in the CAN buses.
And if you go to try to fix it yourself, you know, you're on the copyright violation, and they put you in jail.
Right, well, yeah.
They're doing that to farm equipment. Doing that to farm equipment.
What?
That the farmers can repair their own equipment, and even the local shops can't repair it. You have to get a factory authorized guy to come down and reset the software in it.
Part of that is because modern farm equipment uses GPS with centimeter precision to plant the rows, and if you screw up with it, I mean, you go directly to the productivity of the farm. you know, these plants.
Well, you get
are,
crooked rows.
And they can be crooked, but the point is they have to be spaced exactly right. the way the, yeah. the growers want them to be spaced.
But I should be able to change out like the carburetor or something.
But no, but it's all, yeah, but it's all it's just one computer package,
right?
Right, with a GPS antenna, and it's actually it's a differential GPS. They have a, an antenna at the corner of the field.
That I didn't know actually.
Yeah, yeah. I had done some vehicle locating analysis for Clever Devices.
Oh, okay.
And you know, you want to locate a bus to within 6 feet. You can't do it with GPS. You know, something else.
Right.
So I started looking into the stuff, and it turns out farming uses a lot of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
cool.
You know, that you know, so on the one hand, I completely appreciate it. I think I saw some stats. It was a while ago now. It was a decade or more ago. But I saw some stats on farming and how inefficient, like, say, the USSR is in farming. Their farm yields off their land are so low because their farmers tend to use very low-end technology. Mm-hmm. They're not using the latest in irrigation. They're not using the latest in tractors. They're not using the latest in combines. But on the other hand, if advances in food growth are depend on having centimeter precision to GPS units that literally cannot be, you know, not talking haywire, being tinkered with by a competent person.
Well, you know. Yeah, but putting it in perspective, it's not that our food supply depends on it. It's the productivity, the high, huge productivity of American farmers.
Well,
so if that productivity drops, right, we're not going to go hungry. It's just they won't have that much extra to sell.
One farmer fails, sucks for him. You know, 100,000 farmers fail, we starve.
Right.
Right.
Right. But it's not really a failure. I mean, the GPS doesn't work. Okay, so your rows are crooked, your productivity goes down. And farming is such a low-margin business that productivity goes down, you probably go out of business. Nobody starves, you just go out of business.
Right, right.
But now that equipment that they're buying, what's the lifespan of it before they stop supporting it? They got to go buy another $250,000 combine.
Right. Hard to know. Hard to know.
This seems just for people who are watching out there. If you happen to be rural, man, this seems like a problem that's screaming for an open source solution. So it seems like that precision doesn't have to be proprietary.
Well,
it could potentially be a shared solution. And I know that some of the folks, some environmental engineer folks who have high precision GPS maps for environmental purposes that are open source. Are they used at that level? I don't know.
So. But I would say don't waste your efforts because again, as I looked into this, I thought, you know, maybe differential GPS or some other these modern systems, you know, you're not going to be allowed the military systems, but some other recent systems would allow you to get the precision you needed. But then I started thinking about it somewhat differently, and other people come up with a similar solution that I originally thought of, which is the time packets.
Right.
And so ultra-wideband radios now you can buy for $50.
Right.
And they'll
okay.
time packets from here to...
Or Arnie solved it.
Yeah. Which leads... I mean...
Call the number at the bottom of the screen.
The dark side of that, of course, is that the same people that do that also do the packet spoofing.
Right, right. So. Yeah, okay. That's true, too. Well, whenever you have a local radio wave and something where it's not... If it's local, it's spoofable, essentially.
Right. All,
anything local or physical is at risk.
Right.
But, you know, you could also... There's things you could do. You could set up triangulation points to verify that things are where you think they are, and, use encrypted keys to verify that you're talking to what you think you're talking to. And
right, but I'll give you a sort of a trivial example. We make tank monitoring systems, and we use a pressure tube. And it's such a pain in the neck to put that tube together that we tried to think of something else to do. Our competitors all use ultrasonic systems, which I expect will be fouled in a couple of years due to the oil tanks. So I thought, well, maybe radar. So now it turns out, because of the automotive market, I have a radar sitting on my desk right now.
Right.
It's this big.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can buy them at Adafruit.
Well, Texas Instruments. Right. But yeah, it's a regular radar, a 70 gigahertz radar. It'll image things, you know, a couple of within millimeters from 6 feet to 2 feet away.
Nice.
It's it's great. It'll count people in a room.
Right.
It's like $50.
Yep. Yeah. So economy of scale solves a lot of problems.
The automotive industry.
Right. Right.
These are the radars that detect the other cars around you.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So that was. Wow, there's a lot of discussion for stuff we agree on. Can you believe it?
Can you really ever have Full agreement.
By the way, I didn't say anything in the beginning, and I should have said this right off the bat, but, you know, you don't want to, like, start the whole show with shout-outs. I just wanted to say thanks a lot to Laura and Steve for making this happen with absolutely no notice. It was, like, total chaos and pandemonium in here just 20 minutes ago. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Got a thumbs up from me on the booth. All right. So was it pandemonium or was it not?
Yep.
It was pretty crazy. There was circus clowns and juggling. And I saw a wild animal run by and eat a pedestrian.
And we had snacks. Yeah. Snacks in the green room.
I guess the first pound question is, what is technology's biggest culture shock for non-technocrats? What is the thing, try to get out of your own brilliant mind and just think about somebody who's not a technician. What is the thing that really has just ruined people's lives that's come out of technology?
Fixing bugs when your computer crashes.
Right. Well, you don't fix them. You just reboot a million times.
What do they do when something doesn't work?
It freaking happened in my car on the way here. I'm like, I want to listen to some comedy and get in the mood to do some funny stuff. And, like, I put it on my car. I rebooted my car on the parkway in neutral, but it still didn't pick up Bluetooth. I'm like, what is the use of paying for this ridiculously expensive luxury version of this car if I can't even get Bluetooth to connect to my phone? So, yeah, that made me miserable today. But, so that's one example, and another one. How about you guys? Is there anything that, like, really, like, you just see normal people just suffer?
The invasion of your privacy. Like, just the sucking of it. And the more your privacy gets invaded, the more professional cyber criminals can find out about you, so the more damage they can do to you.
Right. Are you talking about people, like, attacking innocent things, or like minor indiscretions that become major problems because of the lack of privacy?
I think more the people right now, I think it's more people taking stuff from you, using the intelligence they gather.
It's the property losses.
Yes.
Okay.
But I do think the whole embarrassment thing, if we as a society can't get to the point where we can apologize, accept apologies from people for minor indiscretions, we're doomed.
Apology accepted.
I think privacy was going to be my main response, I guess, but then I think I'm shifting away from that to the intrusion into daily life of computerized elements. Buying a plane ticket. Mm-hmm. Used to be, you know, you'd go to the airport, you'd go to the desk or whatever, you'd actually buy a paper ticket, and that was a process that was fairly seamless. It took a while. Now, when you buy one online, sometimes it works, sometimes it just doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, the screen doesn't load, you can't get to the next screen if you're on your phone. It happens to my mother-in-law, for instance, who, you know, they're not used to digital devices or whatever, and it's going to happen. That stuff filters down. You know, you used to be, you would swipe your credit card. Now you can pay things online. But if it doesn't go through, or if the transaction doesn't work, it's a pain in the neck. You're sort of stuck. You're like in limbo.
Right.
But if you just swiped your card and it didn't work, you go to the shopkeeper and say, look, you know, just key it in.
Well, one of the things that exacerbates this, of course, is that people are in piles and piles of debt. So you may just have enough room on your credit card for one transaction. So if you have a transaction that goes through but doesn't, you know, it actually withdraws the money from the bank, but the vendor isn't aware that it worked.
Yeah, but I think it's something more fundamental. The fact that you've built up this layer of computing or algorithms in between the transaction and yourself, mm-hmm. that it all depends on a chain of working stuff in order to get done.
Right. So so basically what you're saying is in a bigger sense, is you're just completely beholden to the technocrats.
Exactly.
You're depending on
right.
your
right.
whole life.
To do simple things.
Right.
Just to do simple things.
Simple things that a clerk could do with a pencil and a calculator in a minute.
And I think a lot that translates to kids today not being able to do simple things, like what happens if your GPS goes out? You know, can my 13-year-old daughter actually use a map to get from point A to point B?
If your phone dies, everyone is gone.
Right.
You know, I don't know anyone's number.
Well, my
right, that too.
I've complained that when I was in high school, we would say, you know, I'll meet you at 3rd Avenue and 16th Street at 6 o'clock.
Right.
and that was it. You just figured out you would get there, the other person would get there, and you'd meet, right? Now, you're on your phone, and if you're tracking the other person, you basically don't have to do anything. You're just walking with your head down, going to the spot. So the ability to do planning on your own is being taken over.
Right, right. Yeah, that's not great.
I mean, my wife likes to use Waze and Google Maps simultaneously to watch them converge on the route as we get to where we're going.
Oh, you do that for fun? I've done that not for fun.
Well, you got to do something while you're driving.
They really don't like it when you drive in the middle and you just average them together. You know.
Well, what's funny is that they actually
get off my lawn.
What's funny is that they actually have to converge at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You are going to get where you're going.
Yeah, Google Maps has been better than a lot of the other nav technology for a while, so I've been using it, but I'm really not I'm not happy with the state that the other map technologies are in. I mean, like, especially car GPSs, like the car manufacturer GPSs.
They're way out of date.
Yeah, I mean, they're not only they're out of date, they just suck. I mean, yeah. I tried to go to Disney World as one of my first tests for my new GM back in 14. They tried to send me across the Atlantic, you know.
You should go buy a higher quality car.
Yeah, that was the luxury trip.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
What was that?
Yeah, 10 units. I went off of Android Auto, though, where
you plug in
your phone.
Right? Yeah, well, a lot of those, you know, like, I mean, it's not even... Not even that. I mean, it's just, you know, like the idea that you're somehow safer because you have your nav unit embedded in your car, right?
It's not safer,
and
it's
you're
just
not and you're not holding your phone, right? You can get a ticket for this, even though it's a nav. You can't get a ticket for this,
right? But if
this sucks, this is worse.
Yeah. Right. But the navigation, that's why they make clips for your phone.
But the navigation system fails. What do you do? I mean, it used to be you said, well, you know, I know how to get to where I'm going. You figure it out. You know, some internal map or whatever. If you didn't know where you
were
going.
Right, right, right.
But some of the systems.
We probably have some of those maps still. But you know, yeah, I don't think my kids do.
Right.
They don't really just don't know where anything is.
Yeah, but some of these GPS systems, like if it loses the signal, all of a sudden the map goes dead. It's like you're two blocks away. It's like, where do I turn?
Well, one of my friends used to be a Marine, and he said in the military they still all have to learn to navigate by map because there are large portions of the world where GPS doesn't work. Like
confirmed.
If you're under the canopy of a rainforest or something, you know?
Confirmed. Yeah, even large portions of America.
Oh, yeah.
Everything just stops working. You're like, okay, well, I guess we're going straight on this road. I hope there's a gas station eventually.
It's hard to beat.
Right.
You know. Yeah, if your electronic nannies make you feel comfortable, yeah, cross country trips aren't for you. So for me, the biggest culture shock, I think, is actually it's an old technology. It's not talking computers. I think television. I think television just completely melted people's brains. We don't think about it because it's a couple generations old, but I think internet's going to have a similar impact. So people who are thinking that the internet's just going to be another television station, you know, it's going to be much more than that.
Yeah.
You know.
You see it today in kids. They walk around with YouTube as they're, like, walking around through life.
I mean, like, you know, in the early days of television, what did they do? They did radio programs with visuals. Basically, they just did it. The script was the same. They just had stuff up on the screen.
Right.
They were, you know, maybe the people were, you know, or they had, like, a picture up. Or
changed pretty rapidly, though. So first TV broadcast
was
19...
That's where we are now. We're in that change.
First TV broadcast was, I think, 1936. And then by 45, you were watching... about Jackie Gleason or something like that.
Sitcoms as we think of them.
So it changes pretty quick. Look, it's another example of where very, very popular technology takes off is airplane flight.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's only about 100 something years old, and we've been to the moon.
Yeah. That's true. That's very true. Well, eventually the plane stops working, you got to switch to jets, but yeah. not back then. Then they were just like, throw fuel at it.
Flight.
We need more, yeah.
Flight.
Yeah, I know.
Airborne and interstellar and interplanetary.
All right, cool. That was good answers. So I got another one for you, and you're not going to like this one. What is your top fail for small business? What's your top fail for small business?
Well, I had a company that we manufactured musical instrument accessories.
And you could pass, by the way, if you don't want.
I hear the story.
No, go ahead. I want to hear your story. Go for it.
So I had a company that we manufactured musical instrument accessories. And that was like, I equated to getting a street MBA. Because it was just like, you know, put a lot of work into it and it failed. Put a lot of money into it, lost a lot of stuff.
Right. How many years did you put into it?
I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe 5.
What did you do wrong?
I didn't do enough market research.
Okay, so was it competing products, or are they too expensive?
The demand for the product wasn't what we thought it was.
Okay, so it didn't matter what you did.
And we didn't have the distribution outlets.
Right.
So I didn't have the distribution channel to market it properly.
Right, so you can make all the product you want, but you couldn't move it because nobody knew it existed, or nobody...
Yeah, you know, it was a great product, but it had limited market. So, you learn that you need to do market research and you need to make sure that
Did it ruin you? I mean, were you ruined at the time? Did it bankrupt you or anything like that?
It came close,
okay.
But, if you look at it the other way...
Good to pull out of the tailspin before you went bankrupt. Everyone knows that.
Every successful entrepreneur has gone bankrupt at least once or close to bankruptcy.
Right.
That's true.
Wait. Say that again for the people in the audience who haven't run a business.
So you might go bankrupt.
Do you guys want Nerf weapons or
look at Walt Disney, he went bankrupt 7 times before he made it.
Right.
So
right.
You think after the 6th time he would have given up?
For
right?
sure, if you're in the talking about the billionaire class.
Yeah.
If that's what you meant, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a billionaire who hasn't at least had failure companies. Yeah. I don't know if they actually went bankrupt.
But they teach you a lot of things.
I know, too.
You don't want to be there.
Okay.
Zuckerberg and Gates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, Gates... I don't know. Does Gates... I don't know if I can count Gates. Zuckerberg, yeah. I think that's true. But I don't think I can count Gates.
Well, you don't know if he didn't have some other sale.
He's getting a $100,000 loan from his corporate lawyer dad to start a business. I mean, back when $100,000 would buy 5 houses.
Well, you don't know, if he failed one of those businesses before he made it.
No, he did not.
Yeah. So he didn't. He started off in a golden sports car, but yes, he didn't fail.
Well, yeah, but look at the multiplier.
Yeah. Yeah,
so there's 6 zeros after that 1,000.
What about the virtual?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't a good investment.
Right.
That's on my top 3 list of things to do if I ever happen to fall across a time machine, is go back and dump a bunch of money into Microsoft.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't hard to argue at the time.
Right.
So, It's still.
But you're right. These guys had a golden shove. They had a huge.
They really. Yeah, it was a huge. And he had all the corporate connections. They owned.
But just to be fair, he did write his high school grading program before people wrote programs.
Mm-hmm.
So he was.
And the man. I actually have a ton of respect for Gates, which is probably why Microsoft scared me so much in the late 90s. Right. Because, if they just extrapolate their growth curve, and there wasn't much room left for humanity in another decade. So,
but I think also, the open source movement, they got to be at loggerheads, right?
Because it's totally two cultures. We're on the same page almost now.
Yeah, complete cultures, right.
Yeah, they were at loggerheads, and it's funny, it really was his corporate culture, the whole closed source, people should always get paid for their stuff, and it's like, he just didn't get that infrastructure could be abused that way. Right. And he just I think he was wrong, but he was wrong in the best possible way. I really have a ton of respect for his wrong position on that. I think people should get paid if there isn't another reason why they shouldn't. I kind of agree with that, but at the same time, Richard Stallman couldn't fix his freaking printer because someone's saying, "We have the code to your printer. We are not going to help you." that's what Linux is.
Is he still alive?
He's still alive. In fact, he did a local talk a few days ago.
Yeah,
I missed it, but I'm hoping to con him into coming over here. How about you guys? What do you think? Business failures, small business. Have you ever owned a small business?
I have not owned a small business except a paper route.
Well, there's your failure right there.
We have one you can buy.
I think I have
my business model, please.
I have $7 and a PayPal card.
Okay. How about you, Ernie?
I think marketing and distribution are key. I mean, if nobody wants to buy your stuff, you're not gonna be able to sell it. And key to that is, figure out what the market's gonna bear. Is your thing gonna fit a price point that everybody's gonna buy it, or is it gonna knock you out? You don't know. But that's an obvious thing. You make something because you had a dream, and then you can't sell it. We actually are making something that somebody had asked me to make, so the market was a little bit turned in reverse for us. But even so, we still face the same pressures.
Well, totally serious. Is that like a better model?
Find out, because we're about to start selling, I hope, in large quantities. But we'll find out. But it's true that when somebody asks you to make something, at least there's a desire to buy it.
We at least have one customer.
Actually, they went bankrupt. So.
Good luck, guys.
But I'll tell you what you can do. There can be roadblocks or stumbling blocks that you cannot foresee or are hard to plan for. We decided to transition from Wi-Fi devices to cellular devices, and we picked a cell phone provider of a cell phone kit so that we pop it into our system. Mm-hmm. And we had our Thursday planning meeting one day, and the guy that makes the cell phone modules kept trying to reach me. I kept ignoring him. And finally, he reaches me in the Thursday staff meeting, and his name is Ben. And he says, "We're not making the Dash anymore." And I said, "Ben, you just fucked me. I ordered 1,000. And so he says, "Yes, I know."
How do you really feel?
But you can buy out the rest of the stock that we have, which was about 300 or so. So we bought that. But subsequent to that, we lost a letter of intent to provide 1,000 devices with these cell phones.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Because what are you going to do? So I said to the
there was much
the rest of the meeting.
Teeth, I assume.
No, I sort of sat for a few minutes and about 30 seconds. I said, "Well, we'll make them ourselves. It's an open source design."
Right.
So we actually now make that, and that's what I showed you on the last program, the little Dash module.
Right.
We now make that ourselves. So we control the whole process now. But the point is that it's more expensive. Buying it from them, they were subsidized.
Right.
Now our prices have gone up.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Good.
So again, it's one of those things that you could always plan to do that in advance. You could say, "Well, I want to make my own modules and do everything from scratch and all this other stuff."
I'm just curious. You don't have to tell me if this is going to screw with your business model, but where do you think economy of scale is going to kick in and actually get to the point where you can't be price shocked out of a market? Like, how many do you need to buy so you can...
For hardware devices, I'll tell you, it's not 1,000. It's much more than that. It's on the order of 100,000.
So around when you get into the six figures, that's when you can go, "Yeah, you're going to make it at this price."
But you can see...
More likely to happen.
But even on the component level, you see the price breaks. You go to some of these electric component suppliers, you get a price break at 10 items. You get a price break at 1,000. But then when you get to 10,000 or 100,000, you say, "Call us and we'll talk."
Right. Okay, all right. So you could conceivably be a one order of magnitude from salvation.
I hope it's less than that. Order of magnitude. You can't drop the price by
90%. No, I mean in volume, not in...
That's right,
price. Hopefully not in price, my God.
Well, right.
37 cents for this board.
just for the sake of explanation, there are about 9 million oil tanks in America.
Right.
And about maybe 10 times that amount in the world.
All right, that's awesome, man. And you could be a price shock away from even more. So there's even growth potential depending on how things go.
Right.
I mean, just electric cars. Electric cars take off. It might lower the price of oil and make it more tempting for people to switch over and stuff. So, of course, it's not going to happen with existing homes, but new homes, it could become the new trend.
Right.
All right. So for me, I don't actually have any stunning business failures. I have not run. This is the closest thing to running my own business. If you can call this, a bunch of guys sitting around talking tech,
Not a bad business model.
Who's my audience? What's my product? I guess I'm the product. I don't know. Anyway, but I mostly have worked in, I've worked for people. I have been the boss, so I have had a little bit of that, but it's only fair for me to tell my shtick. But I have had successful investments, so I have been able to pick out other people that have a good plan, and your numbers make sense. This is a good plan. I can see the growth in the broader market, so I have a piece of it at least. I eventually would like to start my own business, but I'm loath to tell you anything else because it's a secret sauce. So I just wanted to say, I don't know if you guys see what's happening here, but like you're both on you're all on your second show, and you guys are way more comfortable. Like, I mean, like it's not that you guys were uncomfortable before, and I mean, we haven't even drank at all, and everyone's just like, yeah, man, what's up? Oh, good. You know, so kudos, and I think I'd love to have you keep having you guys on, and I think this is I think this is a good show model for talking about technology and understanding it. I really think this is something I want to continue. And even if I get hit by lightning, you know, someone else should do it. So I'm not afraid to. You know, some people are like, "This is mine, get away!" And I'm like, "No. Actually, I think it's great. I think the more the merrier.
Competition's
and the same
good.
Thing, user groups too, right? You know?
Yep.
You know, people. I can't tell you how many people have threatened me. I'm going to start my own user group. And you're like, okay. When is it? I'll put it up on the list so people know where to go. You know, because yeah. it's
collaboration, not competition.
It really is the collaboration aspect outweighs the competition aspect. That, you know, you can keep one or two things secret. You know, the really important cornerstones of everything, but everything else, whatever. You know, there's so many different ways, and you can actually end up being better off. Everybody. I mean, yeah, I'm sure. I don't think anyone can deny, speaking of Microsoft, that they definitely stole some of their stuff from other companies.
You know? Probably happens all the time.
You know, and I'm not mad at them about that. Actually, I'm fine with that. I wish they had seen it that way, and then they would be fine with it too. And I think that was their blind spot.
Right.
But yeah, it doesn't, just because it was their blind spot, doesn't mean they didn't do it right. They did it right. You know, everybody kind of like, everybody said, oh, let me make a tweak here, let me make a tweak there, and it's better. So, all right, enough of that rant. So here's a tough one. Actually, maybe I lied in the last question. So based on this question, so I don't know. It depends. Open source art. So you guys all know what Creative Commons is, right?
Yep.
Creative Commons licenses. So is it when open source art lowers the cost of a particular kind of art, is it trivializing the trivial, or is it impoverishing talent? Specifically art, not talking about infrastructure, not talking about things where different mechanical things need to interface with each other or computer programs need to, you know, data sets need to be perfect and 18 companies are collaborating on a platform. I'm talking about art, people doing things for aesthetic reasons, for enjoyment, for relaxation, you know, maybe for informational, you know, that kind of blurry area in the journalism space, but... What do you think? Is it trivializing or trivializing just junk that doesn't matter, or is it impoverishing people?
I don't have a strong opinion on that. I do have an opinion, though, that says that when you, and this is based only on textual stuff that I've read, it's filled with grammatical errors because nobody gets paid for it.
That's true. I can back that up. Confirmed.
So that, you know, that's a problem. I end up not reading the stuff because I said, hey, you know, why? Why not put some effort into it?
Okay. So I have an ace in the hole on this one, but I'm going to wait. I guess I go second, right? I can't say that. Now I screwed myself.
You're in a big blind now.
I've written an open source book. I've written a Creative Commons book, and I was young, dumb. You know, very excited about the whole open source Creative Commons thing. And it's probably the closest thing I have to a failed business. It wasn't a failure. The book was well received. I had probably, you know, 100,000 people read it, or at least downloaded it and looked at it. You know, everybody who did read it and got back to me said it was great. Some people said it was good, you know, so it wasn't all just blowing smoke up my ass. But, you know, some people said it was great. But my biggest critic by far is my wife. But she doesn't like that kind of book. It was a cyberpunk thriller, you know, sci-fi. I put it up for download, and I made it available on Lulu, and people could buy it, and nobody bought it. I mean, nobody. I mean, I got so many reads, and nobody gave me a cent. And I was really mad about that, and I was like... I can't believe it's all just BS. Everyone's like, oh, open source is great, you know, and then they didn't, nobody ponied up, and I made it pretty easy. Now, there's things I could do now, like Amazon has a program where you can put it on Kindle, and, you know, you pay make a micro payment, essentially, and then people would pay for it there, or you can make it free there, but I just, it was not a wonderful experience. And the thing that bothers me the most about this is that, I didn't just bring this topic up so I could rant. I hope you guys have thoughts on this too. I don't know if you're going to be able to after I do this.
We're just shilling for you in the audience.
Right. Thanks. These guys are my captive audience. Good job, guys.
Let's all go donate $1 to the book.
Yeah. Well, I'm not. I mean,
call the number below.
I'm donating all of my appearance fee.
Well, I got my revenge because it's a cliffhanger. So, you know, yeah, sucks for you. You know,
all the world.
I did that on purpose.
You're gonna give us a spoiler.
And by the way, on the grammar side, you're totally right. The grammar was atrocious in the thing, and actually, everyone in the lilac was horrified and sent me transcripts.
But it's a work of fiction. There's no.
Well, right, but even then, you know, I mean, there were problems. Right. There were definitely problems. And I have a stack at home like this of transcripts. People put, I know people read it because they went and edited a whole transcript of the damn thing and sent me the edits. It was the first community edited open source book, which right there, I mean, Slashdot featured me. Nobody argued that, you know, but, I mean, other than the Wikipedia joke, but, you know, it still didn't go anywhere. I had all the notoriety I could ever want with that, you know, I mean, and there's nothing. And so, like, I'm the thing I'm worried, you know, I moved on. I went out, you know, I have a day job, you know, I've had a successful career in sysadmitting. I could go back to it. I probably will go back to it in some capacity at some point, although maybe it'll be for myself. But, you know, the thing I worry about is Cory Doctorow. So Cory Doctorow is probably the best known open source author, and the dude is basically turned him into a journalist. You know, he makes some money, but he's not rich. You know, he's not getting bought.
So what you should do is write another book and then say, if you enjoyed the first in this series,
right,
the next one's available for $5.
Well, so do you think
put it up on Amazon for $2?
So the question is that the model? Is all open source art doomed to prequels to pay for stuff?
That's exactly how the guy who wrote The Martian started. He was giving it away, and everyone said, well, could you put it on Amazon because I don't feel like downloading it. I just want I just want to be able to buy it and put it on my Kindle. It was charged like $2 or something.
You're going
to
hate this, but it's the Justin Bieber model.
No, go on. He's very loved in certain circles.
He put his music videos up on YouTube.
Right.
Yeah. He was discovered.
Right, of course. Yes. Right. Well, I mean, technically, if you have some download limit that would qualify me as discovered, I was discovered as far as, you know, having a fan base.
No, I'm talking about money, dollars.
Yeah, money. Yeah.
Bitcoin.
Money, yeah. Bitcoin. Yeah. Thank you. That's a magic word. Yes. Bitcoin. Yes. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, it seems like that's the answer. It's just a promotional tool. It's open source art. It's just promotional. It's not a real model.
Well, if you're more comfortable with the Red Hat model, give your open source away for free and then charge for service.
Right. Well, what's the service on an art, though, right? I'll reproduce my painting a second time.
Leave the last chapter off.
In person.
Well, Banksy, who had that painting that self-destructed.
Right.
Keep paying me or the painting will self-destruct.
That's awesome.
But if you look at doing the legitimate book, you don't make your money writing a book. You make your money in the promotion of the book. So even if you write a book and you were getting paid,
no, you
for
make
it,
money in the book.
You don't make a lot.
You don't make a lot.
You make your money on doing promotional tours and doing appearances.
Well, generally speaking, for an author to get started. Now, this is not New York money. This is, you know, rural money.
Right.
For an author to get started, if you're not, you got to sell 10,000 copies.
Right.
You know, that's the bottom of the. You know, really, you should be doing more if it's going to be a series, because typically it drops off right after the first episode. So,
but you don't make a lot by writing the book. You make a lot by doing the ancillary stuff, promotions and doing classes and.
Well, it's the same thing in music. Like, you don't make some money off the albums.
So you guys don't think it's a death knell for back off of me. So that was my story.
You didn't promote the book properly.
I didn't promote the
book. Well, we're waiting for the second book.
I got. So everyone's waiting for the
second. Well, you didn't promote it, meaning you didn't go on tour. You didn't go and do promotional. You didn't go.
Wasn't gonna do that. No money. I'm a writer.
That's where you get the money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
there's like six or seven different things you need to do when you promote a book.
You know, we had my first son right after the book, so then I was just like, the numbers never materialized. The offer never came, and I said, screw it. You know, I got other things to do. So, okay. Those are interesting answers. Does anybody else have anything else they want to add on that? No? Okay. Here's a question for you. should platforms like the Raspberry Pi be encouraged or even required as main boards for Internet of Things devices? Now, I'm not talking about when it's impossible and there's no spec for a board with the appropriate shape, size, power requirements. But if it is, shouldn't we be standardizing main boards in Internet of Things devices?
No.
Yeah, no.
I think what you should have is when thing goes out of service is that the software becomes public domain.
Ooh, okay.
So if I like it and I want to still maintain it, I can go and fix some problems with it.
Really? So why not? Why not, guys?
Like being chained down.
Don't like being chained down. Okay.
Yeah, I think you.
Let's
kill innovation that way.
Let's back off and say it's not jackbooted government action. You know, it's a public action committee. It's like an open grassroots kind of open source people and saying, yeah, you know, we don't want to buy your fridge unless you use a Raspberry Pi at its core.
I would say that if you want to make an IoT standard library and that it features an ARM core, that's probably where you would stop.
Okay.
So you think you should stop at the library, not the actual hardware.
Correct.
Yeah, so as long as the same software runs on various pieces of hardware.
Right. You can buy the ARM core from ARM, you know, you load it up onto your FPGA or your whatever, and then
you get a...
Your company accepted, because I know that you guys are basically, you just locked down and you can't get into your devices, but I mean, I assume everyone agrees that Internet of Things devices are just completely out of control.
Oh my God,
not having any kind of serious path forward for sustainability.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And that's exactly what the point is, that if you buy the thing
software
today...
software is the solution.
I buy it today, you know, I get the doorbell or whatever, and then I really like it. In 5 years, it's out of date. And you can't maintain it. You can't buy a new one just like it.
So, of course, I'm not unprepared for this. I was ready for that no. So, how about the Nest with the microphone and the camera in it? You know, right? So people didn't know there was a freaking microphone in there.
I think that companies should have to disclose if you have a device.
Should they be penalized because they put a freaking microphone they didn't tell anyone about on the hardware?
Yeah, invasion of privacy.
Well, there should be privacy laws about that. But yeah, I mean, I have like an Amazon Alexa. I know it's listening.
Right.
But I wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, if you have an Alexa,
I wouldn't assume that my thermostat is listening to me.
If I give you something, if I give you this bottle of water you put in your house, and then you find out I was recording everything.
Yeah.
You're gonna sue me. So why can't we go after
and
the company?
Why isn't that a crime?
Why is this an invasion and that wasn't an invasion?
Why isn't that even a crime? If I took a camera and a microphone and dropped it in your house and was recording your family, I'd go to jail.
Right.
So
why
illegal wiretap?
Or like whoa.
No, really, what about the camera?
I don't know about it.
why is a stored telephone conversation not a wiretap?
It should be.
No, I think clearly the FCC, some authority has decided that it is not, because it's not. But, you know, so not, we're not, none of us are lawyers.
I think
it has
to do with how it comes in, right?
No, I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Well, in New York, so the legal answer, of course, moral and legal can be completely different. But the legal answer in New York is, as long as somebody knows there's a recording going on, it's legit.
No, right. You can always record your own conversation in New York.
Right.
Some states you can't. You have to inform the other party. But in New York, you don't have to inform the other party. But no, but I mean, but that is that you know that you're recording it.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm talking on the phone and I don't press record or do anything like that, why is that telephone conversation stored somewhere on a server, not an illegal wiretap? I didn't authorize it.
Right.
Well, do you ever get called up and go...
Okay.
When you call up the service center, they go, "Oh, this we're recording this conversation for."
Right.
So I always ask, "Can I get a copy of the conversation?" Completely throws them off. You got to go ask their manager, and then they come back and say, "No, we can't do that."
Hold on, sir.
So everyone keeps doing that when they say that.
I'm looking for the answer, sir.
Only because it drives the call center people nuts.
Excellent, you punked them. So as a computer guy, I'm going to say that, no, actually, you're wrong, because computers make so many copies of things, specifically PCs, like desktop PCs or, commodity servers. I mean, you've got a copy in memory, you've got a copy in disk, you've got a copy in cache, you have a copy in the network buffer. You know, if you start enforcing laws like that, every copy counts as a different... This is the problem with the MP3 thing, right? You know, I mean... holy crap, you're going to bust me for having a copy of the music that I just played off of my CD, which is already two copies on my computer of that I'm not aware of because I'm just a user? I mean, does not being aware of something count? I mean, come on, that's not the way the law... That's not the way the law can work.
I think it's a law is no excuse.
But that's different than a Nest thermostat having a camera and a microphone in it. Because it's not something that you would...
Well, but the thing is,
what was the purpose of the camera and a microphone?
Well, they probably wanted to add a feature later where you can go, computer, turn the heat up. Why burn your house down.
Why do you need a camera in there?
It's why engineers put clocks in microwaves, because they can.
Right. Why do they put flight simulators in spreadsheets?
Windows,
you know?
In Windows.
In
right.
Windows, right. You know. Why do that? Because I can, right?
Now they have a camera inside your refrigerator, so you can, you can see the window on the outside, off. You can see what's in here without opening the door.
I mean, I can't, on the one hand, I can't get mad at technocrats because they're like, you know, they're making decisions. There's so many examples of everybody making a sane decision right up until the point of insanity.
Sure, but look, you make a camera, you make a tiny little camera, and it can be used as an endoscope. Mm-hmm. But it can also be used as the logo in a Nest.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, it's the usage of these things.
Right, right. So it's really, it comes back down to the technocrat thing.
And
but
somebody might
have
had.
If he had a guide, if he had a guideline, you know, do this, don't do this, this is acceptable, this isn't, at least he had something to run with, which is why I was kind of going on the software. You know, everybody, the grassroots, like, everybody, like, it's got to be this. It's, you know, why does my refrigerator have to have something radically different every time I look at a different model for its brain? Why can't it be something kind of standard-ish?
Why does the refrigerator need brain?
Sounds right.
Come on, they're never going to stop with the brains and the refrigerators, man. Come on. Obviously, they're not going to stop. It's insane. They're obsessed.
Like the insanity of that everything has to be internet connected and everything has to have a brain. I mean, a refrigerator's job is to keep stuff cold.
We just
end of story.
What?
Water bottles and Bluetooth modules that would connect to your phone and tell you how much water you're
what the?
But wait, see, again, you pick on a sort of ridiculous example, but a company on Long Island makes a pill bottle with a cell phone module in the base.
Yeah.
And that's for people that must take medications.
And it tells your doctor if you're not?
No, it tells if the bottle tips over. It sends a signal, call somebody, goes to a call center or whatever. But it also counts the pills if you run out of pills.
That's good.
That is good.
But why do you need something to remind you to drink water?
Exactly. I'm saying it's the same engineer that could have done both. Right. Well, so in one case you have a ridiculous usage. In the other case you have a real use case.
Well, just remember, some guy
walked
into
the same thing with the farming, with the centimeter level seed drop placement. You know, yeah, sure. Not every farmer is going to be an idiot. Some of them are going to be. This is why they don't. There was a thing because there was this very hush hush thing in the 80s where no doctor wanted to talk about it, and then in the pharmaceutical companies. But they didn't want to give AIDS medication to people in Africa. And when it boiled down to it, why? Because they didn't own watches. They couldn't time the doses right, so they were actually taking a risk of making the AIDS virus stronger. You know, is that the people in Africa, you know, the poor village where they're fighting AIDS, is that their fault? No, they just can't afford watches.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, if I have a watch, what the fuck? Can't I decide this for myself? You know, I know penicillin. I understand that if I give myself penicillin every time I have a sniffle, that I'm increasing the risk of there being making a super virus, right? Mm-hmm. I understand that antibacterial soap is batshit crazy, you know, and fortunately the government finally figured it out too. So one of my favorite government examples of the government doesn't always fail in recent history.
Pass me the Purell, please.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. So you guys agree that a software standard or at least a guideline standard for sure
should be
in place.
Kind of industry standard.
It really should. I mean, is it ever going to happen though? I can't see what social pressure there is. I mean, without a disaster, without somebody in Afghanistan taking over everybody's Chevy and driving it into a wall, I can't see how this is going
to
happen.
No, like you said, if you make a standard set of libraries of core modules and stuff like that, it's going to reduce the cost.
But does that also increase the risk because now you have a standard set of libraries? Oh. If there's an issue with one of those libraries,
maybe a
now,
few targets would be better than one, right?
Yeah.
You know,
there's an army of open source people that are fixing it.
Right. Right. Right.
Then we can update all our watches every 5 minutes.
Right. And everything's in beta.
Yeah.
Everything's in alpha is more like it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
the only industry where you can release something that doesn't work. And
yeah.
People use it.
I don't know. I think there's a few industries like that. Right.
Well, I'll say one
if
worse.
If it weren't for the computer industry, we would all be weathermen.
I think it's one worse because it's actually, if you look at the trend, it's not just that you can release stuff that isn't finished. It's actually how unfinished it is getting worse.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, we're going to get to a point where it just doesn't even work. And you just buy stuff and like, it doesn't work. Well,
look at the gaming industry, you have early access.
Right. And sometimes it works out beautifully. You know, like sometimes if it's just a thing where they're, you know, if you have a product and you're just adding linear features on top of it, you know, where the set of possible features doesn't change, just the actual features of the modules or the pieces you're adding to it, that's fine. But, you know, nothing ever quite works that smoothly. You know, I've seen examples of that's good, but also that's entertainment too. You know, there's a big difference between the piece of software that your kids use to entertain themselves. You know, sure, they have a hissy fit on the carpet, and that may feel like the end of the world, but it's not as much the end of the world as, you know, when your motorcycle decides to shut off on the road because, you know, its telematics unit, and if it isn't here yet, I'm sure it's coming, your telematics unit has been popped or remotely shut down through an accident.
Or where your airplane goes nose down.
Yeah, yeah, well, that would never happen, right? No airplanes would ever malfunction.
Not in recent times.
Not in recent times. That's impossible. Engineers are completely above that. Oh, yeah, or disappear, right? So some comedian was saying CNN spent 2 months covering the Malaysia flight.
Yeah.
You know. And of course, how did that even happen? You know, how do you even get to a situation where you have several fail safes and they all fail and nobody knows what the hell happened?
Right.
You know, that's. And even with that public pressure, the Boeing stuff still happened.
Yeah.
Even with the Malaysia public pressures, I don't think. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is here. You know, I don't want to be mean to geeks. Because I don't necessarily think it's the geeks necessarily that are the ones that are actually doing the hard coding. I don't know that it's necessarily the heads of the companies that are at fault because they're the ones making the decisions about where to cut costs. I don't necessarily think it's the board's fault, you know, for deciding, okay, we're going to focus on these goals for the company. But you put them all together, it's somebody's fault there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, probably a combination of the process.
Yeah, it may not be one person's fault. You know, it's a huge team of people doing
right,
this stuff.
Right, right.
So somebody says, you know, if the sensor reads this, do this. But the guy says the sensor seems to be working. And, you know, so maybe the wire in between got a shaving. You know,
right.
There's always talk about wire shavings, metal shavings.
Right, right.
And the wire runs.
They always make computers run better. all right. I think we beat that to death. Bitcoin. All right, here's one. So, BitLicense fight. BitLicense. What do you think? Fight, flight, or fornicate?
No opinion.
What's
no
a BitLicense?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you guys, you'll appreciate it once. So New York has its own set of unique rules. You know, we're in New York, in case you didn't know that for some reason. We're in New York, and New York is one of the financial hubs of the world, and they have their own, they're trying to innovate, and they have their own Bitcoin and cryptocurrency specific rules called the BitLicense, and you have to comply with these rules if you want to do business as a Bitcoin business in New York. Now I'm talking about commodity or currency kind of action. I'm not necessarily talking about using a blockchain to do something where there's no monetary value, which of course is arguable because what doesn't have monetary value? But okay, so what do you think? What do you think about the BitLicense? Anybody?
Well, it's standardization, so maybe it'll legitimize it more.
So we just as a quick example, we just had Gemini. Not Gemini. And what's that? Oh, man, I don't remember which one it was. There was a company. Well, anyway, there was a company that had an exchange in New York, and just stopped trading here and said, "Okay, we're shutting down all trading." I mentioned it on one of the shows. And they were trading Bitcoin to dollars, and they were an exchange, so they definitely did currency changes. And they said, "We're just not going to do business in New York." Now, I don't know. They were trying. They were going through a regulation process. I don't know. I assume they're retrying, but they gave people till June to get their Bitcoin, if they're in New York, to get their Bitcoin off their systems. So You know,
well, a lot of people did that with the GDPR with Europe. They're just not doing business with Europe because it's too difficult to comply to GDPR.
Yeah, they're going to be screwed anyway because California just passed the GDPR like law.
Set of issues, yeah.
That's going to spread all over.
Yeah,
right.
The key is enforcement, though.
So tell me more about the GDPR.
So the GDPR basically says that if you're doing business in with people in Europe, your data has to be kept in servers in Europe. You're not supposed to be kept in GDPR unfriendly countries.
Right.
So U.S. is not a GDPR friendly country.
All right. So you can't just dump your crap off in Sealand and say, okay, well, you know, bon voyage.
That's
you know,
a great
good luck.
Idea.
Yeah, yeah.
The hardest part about it though is the right to forget. So you have the right, as me, I can call up, if I'm German, I can call up Google and say, delete every instance of my name everywhere in your systems. And they have, Google has to go through their massive databases and find every reference to me and delete it.
Right.
That's extremely costly.
Right, right. It's costly to be sure that that happened.
And right, and the fines
because
are astronomical.
The same problem we were talking about before, how many copies of something are there in a computer?
Right.
Yeah. So no opinions. How about, so welcome, Ariella. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
So if you don't know, Ariella has not been on the show.
No.
So she is a CCNP in security. Is that right?
I'm working on getting my CCNP in security, and I just finished CCIE boot camp.
Boot camp, right. So you're also working on your CCIE at the
moment.
You're not
yeah.
quite there, but...
Not there.
You're close.
I'm close.
Yeah, so
close enough.
She's our network guru, so thank you so much for being
thank
on the
you.
Show.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry we missed you at the beginning. We had some good arguments. Nobody's
okay.
bruised yet, though, so... So we were talking about BitLicense, so I was curious if you had an opinion. So what are you... happy with BitLicense? Do you think it's good for New York? Do you think it's bad? You know?
I'm embarrassed to say that I'm not up.
So, okay, they weren't that smart. They just
okay.
said the same thing. So New York has its own set of rules.
Oh, yeah, I know about that.
Yeah,
so
okay. That's what they call it. It's a BitLicense.
Okay, so... Now, I found it intrusive. I had to register a lot of my personal information, send driver's license where in the past, before New York State had that license, I would just buy cryptocurrency anonymously.
Right.
And I could just dump it anywhere in the world. Or.
Right. So, I found that was the case, too. The immediate effect of the BitLicense was that when I went to an ATM, I had to give it my license.
Right.
I literally had to stick my license in the machine
right.
and tell it exactly who I was so that I couldn't possibly get away with a transaction outside of the system. You know? And, I mean, I kind of understand why they're doing that at the bank level, but at the individual level, this is like, wow, imagine if cash transactions were this intrusive. You know, forget about your airport example. You know, this is like next level... stupid, you know, for being able to like just to get by, you know, easily, you know, Bitcoin. When I went to my, I did all the math when I paid my taxes for my Bitcoin by hand. Okay, you know, it doesn't have to be hard.
They have calculators for that.
Yeah, I know they have. I know they have Coinbase lets you download a whole thing. If you've done all your transactions in Coinbase, they'll literally just give you a report. And you can just hand it right.
I probably have a slide rule somewhere.
Right. Yeah. So I mean,
if you want to buy it.
But look, you go into the fundamental.
Is that your business model?
You go into the fundamental model for Bitcoin, which was to emulate cash without the piece of paper.
Right.
And to do it across the world.
Well, the Bitcoin works fine. It's the government that's being stupid.
Yes, but if in order for you to hire a hitman in the garage, you got to go meet the hitman and give them the money.
Right.
Right here, you don't have to do that.
Well, I could send any of you guys cryptocurrencies. I don't have to know you. I could hire it. Example, anyone I want to do anything
right.
I want, and
go on.
You anonymize your currency. So there's apps or there's applications where you can take a Bitcoin. I mean, the original Bitcoin, because it's a ledger, is tracked to me, but I can anonymize it and
right. Right, so, you know, I'm with you. I completely agree, and I think that the main problem, the reason that Bitcoin isn't taking off more as a real currency, you know, we talked a little bit about this on our show. Yeah, we talked about this quite a bit. And, you know, you can... Bitcoin is just as honest or dishonest as the person using it, you know. You know, I know for a fact that the vast majority of transactions out there, there's kind of this stigma around Bitcoin that it's only for criminals. And actually, the criminals are dollars. That's what they use. They always want to use cash.
They use cash. But talking about criminals is, I was talking to people from outside of America, and they use WhatsApp. And they say, oh, and I said, what about Signal? They said, no, no, criminals only use Signal.
Right.
I was like,
okay. But on the other hand, you know, I'm not necessarily against regulation. A lot of these regulations came after 9/11 as banks were trying to stop people from funneling money to terrorist organizations. So I guess it really, you can't even have this conversation without talking about what a terrorist organization is, which is a little.
But think about it is, but is the average mom and dad really funneling money to a terrorist organization? You know, they're so intrusive. You go open up a new bank account.
Yes.
And they want everything. They want, like, your blood.
I mean, you know, there's going to be moms and dads that funnel money to terrorists.
But it's not the average person that the services are worried about.
No.
It's the person making $9,999 transactions once a day.
How much much damage can you do to the mean case in order to prevent the edge case?
Yeah, again, look, it's the pinhole camera in the nest, right? It's the same thing. It's either an endoscope or it's a pinhole camera in the nest. It's the same thing.
Right.
It's just one is a good use, one's a bad use.
Which is one of the reasons it's important that we have this show, because people, you know, I think 9,999 people out of 10,000 have no idea that any of this stuff is even a problem. They say, oh, they'll just take care of it. No. No, we're talking about this now, but no, it isn't necessarily taken care of.
Right.
You know, you got to start, you know, you got to pay attention. The technocrats are making decisions for you. So, and I'll say it again later. all right. So let's move on to the next one. I think we're spinning our wheels on that. So of course the question is who is really suffering the worst at the hands of the technocrats? Now I'm going to throw some examples out there. Is, you know, you guys are suffering at the hands of technocrats? How absurd! Nerds are very friendly and nice. So the really, you know, example, possible car hacking. Yes, I know it hasn't really happened in mass, but it only has to happen once to be catastrophic. Walled gardens, S-curves, which is one that most people probably would not have put on that list, but it has a real impact. You know, in case you don't know what an S-curve is, it's this a lot of technologies will start off really slow, and you'll see a whole bunch of new versions of the technology in a short period of time, and the last final version of the technology that people tend to use tends to taper off at the end. And of course, this has enormous business impacts, right? So a lot of people are employed to just get the first version working. A whole lot more people are employed on the subsequent versions, and then all of a sudden, the employment drops off. So it's even an employment problem, like a civics problem. S-curves. Democracy itself. So, you know, how can you make informed decisions if all your information is going through a walled garden, for example, you know, and you can't really have a democracy unless you have people making informed decisions.
Do you know what the difference between a democracy is and a republic? Most people don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm just talking about democracy in the inclusive with republics, you know, people making choices for themselves whether choosing representatives or not. But yes, that's true. A lot of people don't even know that. So I'm assuming that's not our audience, but if you are, welcome.
Explain what that means so that in case they don't know, they know what it means.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, and also intellectual property and pharmaceuticals are another example of two things where technocrats really hurt people. You know, technocrats aren't just computers, and this is a mistake that a lot of people make. Technocrats is a technocracy is any time you've got one person making a bunch of technical decisions that other people would have to study and for whatever reason haven't. Now, culpability, you know, is it their fault? Are they just too dumb? Are they just not interested in that? Are they just too busy? Are there just too many things to study? I mean, the last Renaissance men died off in the early 1900s. You know, just nobody understands everything anymore. It's too big. So,
you left out one glaring example.
Okay, cool. Please.
Women.
Women, okay. You mean women being suffering at the hands of technocrats?
Most software is written by men.
That's true. Well,
software is written by white men.
White men, right.
No, I think, well, what
I'm
about...
I'm a white guy. I'm sorry!
But isn't most software written... I thought they were written... I think...
Who were the first programmers?
Well, what about...
Actually, it's true.
No,
women.
What about Indians?
Right.
From like...
Right.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of... So the good news is I think, at least in New York City, now I have not worked in the tech field outside of the New York City area, you know, either Long Island or New York, but in New York City, I have yet to find a position that I haven't found diversity in. So there is one kind, more than one kind of person in every kind of position that I've seen.
I think that's a New York
thing.
What's that?
Well, I think what.
But that's over the course of 20 years. So this isn't like some social. This isn't like, you know, like a social justice flag carrying running over the hill thing.
Right.
This has been happening for at least a couple of decades.
But if you have a diversity officer, they're going to snap up women programmers as quickly as they possibly
can. Yeah, well, for sure.
Right.
For sure.
So,
but I find.
Well, we can't ask the woman. Don't ask her what she thinks. That's a joke. I'm kidding.
I'm sitting next to
her. No, I feel that IT is some of the most diverse, but except I think sometimes I think higher up the management chain, it's still an all boys club.
Yeah.
Very much an all boys club.
Well, so one of the things I've brought up with people, and they don't want to hear it, which is that it's really scary. That's a huge problem, but when you make it too easy for women to accuse men of wrongdoing, you actually make it worse. So this is something that I've seen in the news lately. Now, who knows? It could just be this tiny sliver of what's happening. But men have, in Wall Street companies in particular, there's been a couple quoted, and I'm sure they regret it, so I don't have to say that this is just coming from me, that men are afraid to be alone in a room with a woman, because if she decides to lie, they're screwed. You know, they
some companies said they can't be.
Right.
To make sure.
And I mean,
that is bullshit.
You think it's bullshit?
Yeah, absolute bullshit.
Interesting.
Because look at the women that write women that write game programs.
Right.
They like basically have to hide from the assaults.
Right. In New York or
no, anywhere, worldwide.
In general. Can see it even on Twitter, like the information security world.
You
has
just try that shit when I'm playing a game with you.
No.
There won't be enough left for you
to bury. I'm talking about the programmers that write the games.
Oh, you're talking about the people playing the games.
The programmers that write the games. The programmers that write the games.
You see it even on Twitter, the information security people who are women. You know, they'll post something. Hey, you know, I found this exploit, and these will be people who are really well seasoned, really know their stuff, and they're like, I found this exploit, and then men will come on and say, well, what guy helped you, you know, or you know,
or
it would be better if you were hotter or whatever. It's like
better if you're hotter.
It's like it's like, God, you make every man look bad. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I feel bad.
Well, definitely. So, Ariel, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. What is this happened to you? And has this happened to you in previous? One of the things I brief people on before the show, you can abstract. So I know you had a few employment experiences at different companies. So you don't have to talk about any particular person. In fact, in this case, I would say you probably don't want to.
Right.
You know. But have you ever been blatantly discriminated against, or even subtly discriminated against?
Sometimes managers talk to you like you're an idiot.
Right.
You know, because I have blonde hair and I have boobs. And
well, maybe it's just a blonde thing. I get that too.
You know, they feel like you're an idiot. And like, yeah, I do know what a VLAN is. And,
right.
You know.
I do know what a VLAN is. Twirl the hair.
Yeah, I know what intimate, you know. So it's like, and they can't tell the difference between a /24 or a /26 or whatever, or
right.
23. And they try to run things. It's like, okay.
Right. Do you think that what's going on there is that? I mean, have you ever stopped it? And what succeeded? Was it? Did you stand up to them? Did you say, "Oh, cut the shit"? Or did you just embarrass them and show them?
Oh, no, I embarrassed them. I embarrassed them.
Nice. So that works. Okay.
Embarrassing is great.
Yeah,
it's better than lawsuits for sure.
Sure.
Especially if. You know, I hope the lawsuits are bullshit. I hope that they're the edge case and that situation.
So getting back to that bullshit claim, which I claimed.
Right.
Have you ever seen a successful prosecution where a woman says, I've been raped and wasn't?
Yeah, I mean, there's been accusations in the news that turn out.
Yeah, but nobody ever gets prosecuted for anything. There's plenty of accusations.
Yeah, well, usually what happens is once the lawyers start digging in, then the claims suddenly get reversed.
It would be a prosecutor. That's a crime. It's a
prosecutor. I understand that. Right. Yeah.
Right. So the only lawyers involved would be the defense attorneys.
Right.
Right. So they're going to go to the bat for the guy.
Right.
So there's I can't recall a single case where there was a prosecution that said, you know, the woman was lying. She wasn't raped.
So what about? So here's a question for you. What about minorities? So like somebody mentioned that there's been lots of Indians in the tech field.
Yeah.
You know, and they're typically brought in on HB1 visas, which I freaking hate. I think that that's slave labor, but whatever. Okay. It's not their fault. They're competent. They're looking for an opportunity. They come over here. But I mean, you know, New York City has got millions of black people. You know, why are there not more black workers in tech? You know, is there any answers for that? I mean, is it discrimination also?
Maybe it's cultural. Maybe.
Yeah.
Opportunity.
I've had a number of working for me.
Are they just not taking STEM seriously in neighborhoods with black kids? I mean, my kid's school is completely integrated, and they take STEM pretty seriously. And actually, there are some geeks. There are some black kids that are geeks, but I mean, they're too young to be working yet. Is it just changing now? Is that
no,
what's happening?
I mean, I've worked with black people plenty of times.
I think if you go to
a number of partners that work.
I think if you go to poorer neighborhoods, whether they're black or Hispanic or even white, like even you can go to like coal country, you know, which is as white as it gets.
Right.
And they don't have the opportunity for the base level education that would drive that interest.
Well, I have to say, like my parents were pure, you know, they were products of this children of the 60s. And at that time, they, you know, it was all about, didn't matter about gender or whatever, you could do anything you wanted. And my father was big in, well, he has a chemistry background, and my mom was a teacher, so STEM was just a natural part of growing up in my household.
Right, right.
And that made me who
I was.
Well,
you know what? This is so, as the guy who's done these interviews a few times, and I want you to come on the show. We just haven't had a chance to set something up yet. So thank you for coming on our panel.
Wait. For the record, I had no idea I was going to be on the show tonight.
Really?
So, I had no idea.
Kind of forced her hand to get on.
Really?
I thought I was going to just hang out in the back.
Yes,
because I just came from my hot yoga class.
So sometimes the spotlight on women in tech is not willful. We got one. Put her on.
You didn't take a grip. You pushed me in here. I had no idea.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
You're handling it well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you're not bright red or anything. So good job.
Thank you.
So yeah, I mean, so we have. You have the problem of minorities in general, whatever the minority is. Women are not a minority, obviously, in the world, but they are a minority in our field.
Yes.
You know, maybe not as much in physics, because you have a physics
background. No. I can tell you, I've been to meetings, experimental collaborations, and there's a woman physicist who is a professor at the University of Minnesota now, and she would put up with... she must have known this other guy since they were probably maybe graduate students or something.
Mm.
And she would put up with I don't quite understand why she put up with it.
Mm-hmm.
She just sort of ignored him when he would go off on... he wasn't mean or anything. He was just purely sexist.
Right.
And she would ignore those comments. They would have professional discussions in these meetings, but you know, whenever we would make some sort of
right, at some point he has the physics, right? He can't just bravado.
Yeah,
he has the
meetings
physics.
The meetings were not social meetings; they were production meetings of
right.
some sort. And so she would just sort of put up with it. I think she's got a higher ranking. They're not at the same university. She's got a higher ranking position, I think, than he does or did at the time.
Right.
So it was a little bit unusual, and I never really asked her about it, but I did wonder about it.
So I actually have an interesting thing. It was actually, this was at one of the scientific institutions I've been at, and I've been at three, so good luck figuring out which one. I've literally seen, this is going to be visual, I've literally seen a man walk up to people and talk to them with his penis in their face like this. Blah, 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 blah. Right,
sealed away, right?
And it was the microphone. No, just like this. I mean, maybe like 6 inches away.
So it feels like he'll seal. Like it was packaged.
Oh yeah, it was packaged. It wasn't out. It wasn't out. But you could probably see if you know if one of his testes did a little dance. You could probably see it. You know, and I've seen him do it to men and women. So, you know, and the thing is, I think with that particular guy, now, of course, every case is different, but with that particular guy, that was an intimidation technique. It wasn't about who the sex of the other person was. It was about, fuck you, I'm in charge, right? And so the question is, how much of these cases where the guys, where the aggression is the problem,
aren't most sex crimes
of the person who's being aggressed.
Aren't most sex crimes, though, crimes more of aggression than
power.
Actual...
Well,
yeah,
men,
power.
Men,
it's about power.
Men rape men. It happens.
Yeah, it's about power.
It's about power.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the American Physical Society has a newsletter that comes out once a month, and this latest newsletter had an anonymized account of what happened at I think it was the Nuclear Physics Society meeting. And it was a woman postdoc who was going to be delivering a talk, and she was trying to get in touch with her advisor. And these are all verbatim, but the speaker is anonymous. Mm-hmm. And she was discussing something with one other professor, and the professor says, you know, well, let's take this to the bar, we'll get a drink. And he says, well, maybe we'll take the drinks up to my room. And so she said, of course, you know, that's not going to happen. but
well, it's some other...
See,
well,
and I would have just said, I don't have my electron microscope to find it.
You got it. You got to humiliate the fucker.
But you can't do that.
You can't.
No, you certainly can do that. But if the guy takes revenge and cuts your funding,
if he tries to kick revenge, get me in on it.
Again, it's the imbalance of power. And
making my eye twitch, dude.
So no. But the point is that's not my point. The point is that somebody else, a third party, reporting on these meetings says, I've never seen any evidence of any sexism at these meetings.
Right.
But of course, he wasn't there to hear that conversation.
Right. So this is kind of getting back to one of the things, and this is, I'm glad that we're all on the same page with this, that no one's going to stop the growth of cameras. And I actually like that everybody records everybody else, because some people are freaking liars. And honestly, that's a lie. You know, it's a lie to say that you're not being sexist towards someone else when you are.
And well, this was a third party that said he never saw anything like that. But of course, he wouldn't be in listening to the conversation where the guy says, let me take it up to our room.
Right. And you know, it's not entirely... He can't testify to something he didn't see.
Exactly, but I've never seen anything like that either at the conferences I've gone to.
You know, and
it happens
all the time. This is the problem with predators, is they'll pick their opportunity, and it's going to come up sooner or later. And this is why I like people recording everything that they do.
I really think people should.
And part of that is also being more forgiving. You know, it's one thing to be attracted to a woman and to ask her out. It's another thing to persist when the answer comes as no.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I think that goes for either sex.
And I think you also have to know where it's appropriate. If you're at a work function,
I've just never smacked anyone's ass.
Well,
I don't know why people do that. I don't get it. You know,
or send pictures of
at work,
private parts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I know quite a few women.
Dick pics, really?
Yeah, not one would be impressed by that kind of picture.
It's like, thanks for the anatomy lesson.
Actually, the best response I heard for that is to send one back.
That's awesome.
There's a great meme out there. You know, send me a pic in your bra, and the girl sends a bra with a picture of herself.
You know. Getting back to the cameras, though, Walmart just started putting all of their, in Europe, I think in England, all of their security guards with body cams, because they were being harassed by customers.
Mm.
So to protect the employees.
Right.
I'm with that too.
I mean, you know, my reaction when I leave a job is log the shit out of me. Write everything down. Record everything. I don't want to hear later that I did something wrong. You know, protect me.
Right.
You know, I lock me out of all my accounts. I don't want to hear I logged into it and broke something.
That's why I don't fully understand why, like, cops don't want body cams. I would think that it would be
kind of funny, isn't that?
Yeah.
Well, because not...
Well, we say some cops, right? Because, of course, there's going to be some that are perfectly fine with it. Maybe they just haven't thought it through.
Yeah. You know? If you're not doing anything wrong, you really don't have much to.
Well, no, but I think the feeling is that it's going to be used against them.
No forgiveness.
Right.
Letter of the law.
Right.
Brick come down on them like an iron fist.
Well,
yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, I agree. So, okay, this was not where We didn't even answer the question, people. We're just talking about women in tech.
Because you left women off the list.
Yes, I did. So Paul and I actually talked pretty extensively about it. So I do have one positive thing to say. I don't want to be negative. I assume, are there any women working with your... You have one woman, for sure, working
with you. My chief operating officer is a woman, yes.
Excellent.
There are a lot of amazing women in tech on Long Island that that also...
Sorry, I didn't mean to like. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I did remember there is a woman working for your company.
Yes,
but they're great, you know, mentors to other
women.
Other women, yeah. And there's a couple of women in tech organizations on Long Island.
Yes, and actually, Paul has been involved in one of those, and we were talking about
yes.
extensive. If you think this is interesting, check out last week's Technocrat because Paul and I talked about this.
Yeah, you can go to April 30th at the Refuge. I think there's a ListNet event that's co-sponsored with Women in Tech.
So I want to say, like, I've been part of this user group, the Lilog, that user group from the beginning, and one of the things that I found in an early Lilog meeting is that when an attractive woman showed up, she was hounded. She was completely swamped, and the problem was, it wasn't that the men were evil. It wasn't even necessarily... The men were thoughtless, for sure. They weren't thinking about how she felt. But they weren't being evil. I don't think their intentions were bad to make her day miserable. They all wanted to date her. They were like, a woman in tech! And they saw that as their one opportunity to date someone. So I think that it's important to make the differentiation that if... You know, between someone that's attracted to you and someone that's interfering in your work, you know, and using it as a weapon. So the real question is, you know, when is dating weaponized? You know, when is the battle of the sexes weaponized? When it becomes, you know, and the solution that I found for this is that I always make sure to go up and say hi and greet anybody who comes into the meeting, regardless of what their sex or their background or anything. Say, hey, how you doing? Welcome to the group. You know. We basically, anything goes, anybody can socialize with anybody, we don't have any restrictions, these except for this and this and this, and that's it. And that way they have an intro and they feel comfortable, but I don't know, I think I did that with you, right? When you came, do you remember when I said hi, when you came?
I can't remember, it came so long ago.
Yeah, it was a while, you've been part of our group
that's
for a while.
That's the impression he made.
Yeah, I know. So, right, well, but the main thing is, you know, I just don't want to see... Other than that, I don't know what I can do. You know, what can you do in a public forum where you know, I mean, I can kind of stand, become the third wheel, you know. I could be the unwanted wingman, I guess.
I think people just need to...
That's a golden rule. That's a golden rule.
Do unto others.
Yeah.
Well, if I was being aggressive with someone, I would hope someone would stop me and say, hey, dude, cool it. You're being weird.
But people should... I mean, it's kind of common sense. If you're not in a place... If you're not, like, in a bar, you know, hanging out, then probably the person is not looking to meet their future spouse.
Hey. First of all, I met my wife in a bar.
I met my wife in a bar.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, and that's actually pretty normal. But plenty of people meet their wife in a supermarket or in a parking lot.
Right. But if you're in a work...
Maybe not a dark parking lot. That might be pushing it. But
if you're in a work function or you're in a user group meeting or something, sure, you can become friends and stuff like that. But to just, like, if a woman walks in to walk over and be like, hey, you want to have dinner? That's kind of inappropriate.
Right. Well, it certainly shouldn't be the first thing out of your... just dating advice in general. Try an icebreaker first, buddy. You know?
But most people in tech are not the most socially adept people
in the world. This is the problem. They have zero... Some of them have zero experience.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
Or petrified.
You know, I don't want to perpetuate geek myths either. Because a lot of geeks are very well-rounded, normal people.
Absolutely.
And then they, you know... But there are definitely geeks out there that's it. Whatever they learn, their interactions.
You're destroying the definition of geek, though.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
There's just no well-rounded geek.
Right. Well, yeah, there are, I think.
I agree the definition is sliding towards cool.
Right.
But it still might take a couple of years.
Well, if you ask me about... All right, so I'm going to reveal a weakness here. If you ask me about sports, I don't know jack shit. I don't really know anything about sports, right? But you talk to me about computers... or motorcycles, or music, I could talk for hours. So I'm a geek on multiple topics.
So I had the same problem, actually. I'm about as liberal a Democrat as you're going to find. My wife likes to say that I'm a communist. Yet,
excellent. And actually, that's pretty normal with open source people.
Yet, they're
either libertarians or communists.
Right. Yet for my 50th birthday, I got taken to the Indianapolis 500. I love motorsports.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Dang, you're redneck.
Exactly. So we went to the
Look at the lamp shop.
We went to the Indianapolis 500, and I'm Jewish, so I'm joking with my wife. Say, so let's play Spot the Jew. Right?
Yeah.
Guess what? Guess what?
Nobody spotted you.
No, we didn't see anyone.
Oh, okay.
It's just us two.
Right. But nobody spotted you either, did they? Nobody came up to you and be like, hey, you're a Jew?
Had I opened my mouth, I might have. But I've been to other car races as well, stock car races and so on. I love all that stuff. But I'm the only Democrat at those races.
I think we're gonna have a Jew face off here. she broke it out. Okay.
I'm a Goldberg.
But we're not in the stands at NASCAR.
Right, exactly. We're in New York.
Right.
So I look the part. I'm actually a mutt. So this, I kind of laugh my ass off when everybody's like, oh, white people suck, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, I just look white. You know, that happens. It doesn't happen every time. But sometimes people are mutts, and they look like one parent or the other. Or they tend to look, you know, I'm really all over the place. Yeah, sure, I'm half German. But I'm half other stuff, too. So what am I? You know, am I the thing that's convenient for you? No thanks. Right? This is the problem with creating cultural fiefdoms.
I think that's the biggest problem in our society.
Yeah, integration is the solution, not
everybody has to have a label in our society. You know, and I think that's where a lot of it comes from. You know, this person's black, or this person's white, or this person's a Democrat, or that person's a Republican.
Right.
We're all just people.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Some of us are good, some of us are bad.
We went cross country, and my wife is a minority. She looks like a minority, and we had zero problems. We were in 30-something states, and we had zero problems.
Why would you think you had problems? I travel all over America.
You know, because you would think that the racists were marching over the hill, you know.
Because that's what you were told by...
When I was a kid,
when we used to travel down south...
But when you were a kid, and how old are you now?
We were not always physically together. For the record, I was not always chaperoning her. Sometimes we were not physically together. Right. We would separate.
Right.
So it wasn't like there were opportunities for her to have problems.
My parents used the name Gilbert when they would make reservations and stuff, so that people wouldn't hear the Goldberg name, you know?
But that's then, but you have to, I mean...
It's gotten better, no doubt, but that's for us. But not if you're black or a person of color, it's a totally different world. I had worked with a guy.
For sure. Right. I'm not saying there aren't racists. There are definitely racists. I mean, they come to me. They find me, right? Because I look the part. So, and I'm like, yeah, go fuck yourself.
A couple of jobs ago, I worked with a guy who was black, and we used to have to go together to a meeting in Washington 4 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he would drive. He had a really nice BMW. And every time he would drive, we would get pulled over at least once, one way or the other. So one trip, I drove both ways, and I have a bit of a lead foot.
Mm-hmm.
Not once. He would drive, you know, 55, 60 miles an hour, get pulled over every time in a state right next to us that has lots of plants.
Wow, driving all black. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. I never believed it until...
How about that Danny Glover thing? Remember when the taxi ran from him? No taxi would pull over. And
I worked there for...
And the police got called on Ving Rhames as he tried to go into his own house.
Yeah.
In fairness, that's happened to me too. I've had the neighbors call the cops on me once.
Well, it's your ponytail.
It was my ponytail,
yeah.
For sure. But you know what? I mean, it doesn't just that. You know, it's also a general mindset of paranoia.
And I agree. You're probably as recognizable as Ving Rhames.
Right. Well, to my freaking neighbors, you know. I mean, I know I was sprouting up like a weed, but come on, guys. You didn't see me yesterday outside? Come on.
But it is a lot easier for, like, the three of us to kind of get by because we're white. And unless you know my last name, you're not going to know I'm Jewish. And I need
to
really look.
What can be done? I mean, clearly talking about it.
Revolution.
Revolution. Ah! So we almost had that kind of chaos here before we started the show. So we just had planned really badly, poorly planned podcast. But other than poor planning, what else can we do?
I think things are just changing. Things are becoming better. I think it's just generational, each generation.
I have the same view. I see things as not fixed, but getting better.
Right. I mean, every generation gets better and better and better.
You know, it was very, there was a lot, there was blatant segregation when I was a kid. And, it was blatant segregation when I was a kid, and it's not that bad anymore. You know, it's getting better. You know, it's in most of the places I went, there was not segregation in place. There was integration. But there were a few towns, and I'm not going to say where, because maybe I should another time. That's not what the show's about, so I'm not going to go there.
No.
But there were a few places that were segregated. And fuck those places, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But who introduced segregation? Woodrow Wilson?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's
he made the deal, so.
Yeah. Well, there's been. Well, come on, he didn't start it, man.
No, he made the deal with the progressives.
Oh, yeah.
So he became president.
Yeah, I'm no fan of Woodrow Wilson. Don't get me started on Woodrow Wilson. Anyway, so. All right. Other than women, what is the second worst thing? Discrimination against women. What is the second worst thing that technocracy is? That went way off the rails. Right. I loved it, by the way. Thanks, guys, for being.
I think it went straight to the heart of the problem.
I agree.
I'll wait to hear my answer.
I think the number two thing would be people without means. People who don't have money, don't have access. Because if you don't have...
But wait. But don't certain cultures value education? Like the Jewish culture? And
sure.
The Indian culture? And certain maybe other cultures don't value it as much?
Right.
I mean, we are taught.
Yeah, but
we brought it to be the doctors or lawyers or whatever, basically.
Well, a lot of these kids don't even have that opportunity, so if they wanted to go out and get it, it's not there. It's not in schools.
But isn't certain cultures where if you want to become very successful, you made fun of and you put down?
I think Judaism actually really needs to branch out more into rural areas. I think you're going to see them. I think that, you know, if we're really talking about existential, I think we're going to see a lot of problems for them in the next 20 to 30 years when things go much more rural. I think cities are becoming less important. It's less important to meet in physical person. And I think that, you know, now that we're getting into the 3D printing kind of world where you can build anything anywhere, you know, I think one of the advantages that Jews have had is that they've been able to walk the temple. They have to walk the temple and they have to have weird hours. And
I drive.
Right.
I do too.
And a lot do.
Right.
You know, some do, some don't.
I do occasionally.
How orthodox
too.
You feel like you're being, but, you know. It's this is I laugh at the silly anti-Semites, you know, when they're just like, you know, Jews, blah blah blah, and it's like, yeah, guys, they live in cities because they have to walk the temple. That generally, so the temples tend to be in cities, so they tend to live in big cities. And where's all the power center? Big cities. But I think that's changing. So what may have been an advantage before may turn into a disadvantage.
So yeah. You see everyone like moving to smaller towns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see more. Well, I don't know. It's not going to be everyone, but I could see more of that. I think it's going to be disproportionately more important over time.
You're making a prediction, although the actual demographics are going the other way.
They are. Right now, they're totally going the other way. Because right now, everybody's depending on dollars, and that the dollar fountains
there's no
are the banks, and the banks are centered in cities.
There's no opportunity. If a large agribusiness is going to do your farming, and it's run by three people.
I mean, it's just the numbers. It's debt. Yeah. How big is debt compared to everything else? And debt you need banks for. Banks are in cities.
And that does come.
Is it right there?
That kind of goes into the lack of access. If you live in Appalachia, you know, and you're a coal miner.
It's rough up there. Man.
Yeah, you're a coal miner, and, you know, your mine closes. What are you going to do? You have no internet. You have nothing.
Right.
And technology, for better or for worse, is kind of an equalizer.
Yeah. I'm weird. I actually love rural, and I love cities. I don't really love suburbia that much, which is like, what the hell am I doing in Long Island? But I do live in Queens, so.
Right.
That's your answer, yes.
I could never leave this area because, I mean, when you leave the New York area, the food just goes downhill.
Oh, yeah, man. Holy cow. The only thing that saves you when you're overseas is Italian restaurants.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the food is going on.
Yeah.
So for me, my thing, I'm surprised nobody said walled gardens. I thought you would say that.
You know, it's funny you brought that up, is when you set up like Meraki access points, like the splash pages, you can do walled gardens. You can set it up for set up walled gardens. It's like quite interesting.
Right, right. So I think walled gardens are also on their way out, just because there's a ton of Web 2.5 text coming out, and you're starting to see people get away from that kind of model. People are suffering too much. The techs are making too many censorship decisions, some of which probably are justified and some of which are definitely not. So, for me, the big one is pharmaceuticals. I think that's where technocracy is really punishing people, because it's all about intellectual property. It's all about making the latest pill. And they've done a ton of good in the world, and they've done just as much damage. I mean, there are some off-patent pills that work just as well as the patent ones without the side effects.
Yep.
They just got to keep coming out with a new... Not only that, but having worked in science labs, they hurt science. I just tapped on the table. I did it anyway. they hurt science. There's so many... scientists are... And now, this may not necessarily be the pharmaceuticals' fault. Maybe we need to put more money into science, take more science seriously. I'd love to hear Arnie's take on this. But... when I went, I have walked up to the cafeteria line and bought myself a 3-course meal for lunch, turned around, and there's someone in a lab coat eating a bagel, and they're not on a diet because they do it every day. They just can't afford. They're not getting paid. They can barely survive. The only reason that they even can survive in the New York area is because they're given some kind of housing. It's just crap, man. We pay our scientists nothing, and then the pharmaceuticals go dangle, 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 and they go, please. And that's it. And they're owned.
Or
they sign a 3-year NDA, and the freaking company owns them.
A lot of the pharmaceuticals are not even really looking for cures for things. They're just looking to treat them, because chronic conditions are much more profitable than cured ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I see it, too. What do you guys think?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Chronic.
What about the effects on science, Arnie?
Well, I mean, I think part of the thing that you're talking about is that the training period is so long. So the person eating bagels probably postdoc, getting a getting a stipend. And
I'm not saying the training period isn't necessary.
Well, look,
it might be.
But on the other hand, but also, there's a little bit of a change of purpose. When I was working at Brookhaven, and I met my wife, she's an attorney, but I said, look, nobody ever works at Brookhaven because they went there for the money. Mm-hmm. Nobody goes there because they want to earn a lot of money. They go there because they always thought they were going to be working in a lab somewhere.
Yep.
So that was it's a little bit different.
But it's hard to stay focused on anything when you don't have three hots in a cot. That's kind of what I'm getting. If you're at that level of subsistence, your life sucks, and you're not going to be as good at science.
Right.
Right.
Right. which is why, look, it's as close to a working meritocracy as I think you're going to get, other than, say, sports. And if you're, near the top of what you're doing, you're going to get a nice position.
Right.
But, it's the same thing. If you can hit a curveball consistently, you're going to be very, very wealthy.
Right, right. I mean, I just wonder how many... I've seen top scientists pulled from top teams, sometimes who even win prizes after the fact, and just sucked in the pharmaceuticals. And bye-bye.
Yeah. But also now, again...
How much should they suffer because
my bias is that those guys and women are very prickly. Because they've always been right. They've always been right. They were always the smartest kid in the class.
Yeah.
They were always the smartest kid in high school. They were always one of the ones that beat the curve in college. And every time the professor said, no, you're wrong, the guy would say, no, you're wrong.
I'm not sure you're right, but that's fair. I think that's...
No, these guys and women were always the smartest ones in their little group. That's why they rose.
It's a social sorting mechanism for the people who are looking out for number one.
It's a meritocracy. It's a meritocracy. Now, I used to work with a guy who probably had Asperger's syndrome, because whenever he would talk to you, he would look over your shoulder somewhere over here.
Right.
But he was brilliant. He won the top prize in Malaysia. Now, that's the whole country. Mm-hmm. Right? He won the top prize as a mathematics student, then went to Oxford for his undergraduate work, and then did a PhD with at Cornell. So he's very, very smart.
Right.
Very difficult to work with. Very, very difficult.
I'm sorry. You know, you're one of the nicest physicists I've ever met.
Well, I'm not really a physicist. For the audience,
I've met him quite a few.
I don't have a PhD, so I'm not a physicist.
Okay.
So I'm really an engineer with a physics degree. But the point is that his appointment was not renewed. Mm-hmm. And they had bought him a very fancy workstation to do his calculations, so one of two that the lab had at the time. And his appointment was not renewed, and he sabotaged the workstation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, left in a huff.
That is crap. And actually, I'll tell you, in the IT industry...
He's making more money now as a programmer for a bank.
In the IT industry, you do that once, you're finished.
Yeah, the industry is very small.
No one will ever hire you, at least not in that state again.
Right.
You know?
Yep. Right.
And good luck with the references, yeah.
So. I was one of his references.
Yeah, okay. Nice. Well, fist bump. That's awesome.
They did not.
I guess they heard that story.
They did not ask me about any sabotage.
Yeah.
They just asked me what he was like, and I said he's punctual, very, very brilliant, and.
And will light you on fire if you stand too close to him.
He's not violent. He just was very difficult to work with.
Yeah, yeah. I've been fortunate. I usually do warn. Maybe I'm too nice. I usually warn people. Like if they ask me to be a reference, I'm like, okay. Your reference is going to be great, but if they say, hey, can I use you as a reference? I'm not going to be such a good reference. You sure about that?
Yeah.
And usually, of course, they have the wisdom to back off. If they don't, then I feel like I'm justified. Because if they're that crazy that they can't see the writing on the wall and I say, don't do this, you know, maybe they really don't, you know, nobody wants to be working with them. Okay. Anything else on the worst effects of the technocrats and society? I mean, so definitely check out pretty much any. We talked about STEM in almost every single Technocrat Live, so don't think I'm shying away from it. We really are. We kind of beat it to death, so I don't want to. That's why I didn't want to go any further with it. All right. So, what is a role? Here's a good example. Actually, ties right into the next question. Better than I thought. What is a role model technocrat? What is a person who's a technical expert in a field that affects other people? When they're doing it right, what do they look like? Right here. Question answered.
Here we
Next
are.
Question. All right. You're watching us. Any details on that, or what does a model technocrat look like? What are they doing right? Is there some kind of process they should be doing? Should they be trying to help people out, volunteering at the soup kitchen? Yeah, probably. Probably not as far as being a technocrat, right? Maybe as being a human being, but what makes you a good technocrat? How do you get by and help people out around you? You know, is it volunteering to talk at your school? I've done that. That's fun.
First, to do no harm.
Okay. Yeah. Do no harm. So.
But really, do no harm. I'm like Google.
What? Yeah.
Taking the complicated subject.
It is subjective. You're right. She says it's subjective. He's right.
Taking a subject and just breaking it down to simple concepts that the average person can understand.
And by the way, all the other people who have been on the show have apologized that they couldn't be here, and specifically Rares said the doctor who is Rares Kachova, the guy who was on the show two or three weeks ago, one of those two, he actually has an oath and it's do no harm, but he says before that, you know, that's a normal doctor oath.
It's a Hippocratic oath, right.
It's a Hippocratic oath, but he actually added something to it, and before he says do good. And then it's do no harm. So he actually kind of wrote his own home.
Didn't Google have something like that?
Yeah, don't be evil. Yeah, so much for that.
That worked out well.
Hold on a second. That's great, though. Because they had an oath, and then they retracted it. Warned you.
I've got to make a joke. What is the difference between Google and the Eye of Sauron, for instance?
Right. Less tentacles?
Fewer.
Fewer tentacles. Thank you.
Count them, they're fewer.
Yes. Okay. So I think one thing, talking in schools, connecting with kids, for sure. You know, there's something to this, even if I don't necessarily think they're doing everything right, there is something to this push for STEM and trying to get kids into programming computers. There's not going to be a field in the world that doesn't at least touch computers in the future.
I'll give you an example. When I was at Brookhaven, I would mentor, they had this high school program where kids would come in and they'd spend some time with, in the mornings or so in demonstrations in the afternoons with people like me, unfortunately. And so I got in trouble with the woman that ran the program because she didn't like my example. So in the old comic books of Jules Verne, for instance, and stuff like that, there's a comic book called Man on the Moon, in which they shoot this capsule from a cannon and it goes to the moon. But outside the capsule, there was a dog floating in space. Yeah. So I asked the students, okay, here's a problem. The dog is outside the capsule, he's in outer space completely. Does he freeze to death or does he boil to death? And I just left it at that for them to think about. The vapor pressure in space,
That's spectacular.
Right, the vapor pressure in space is zero.
Right.
And the boiling point of any liquid is when the vapor pressure equals the atmospheric pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So vapor pressure, it should start to just boil away. Anything.
Right.
Any liquid. But it's also cold.
So the answer is both, of course, right?
Well, I don't know what the answer is.
I think it's both.
Well, does it freeze before it vaporizes?
I think the answer I was trying to get them to research.
Wait. The 100 points for the kid that says he sublimates.
Well, that actually, some kids did say that.
Okay.
So what I wanted them to do is to get, there's a thing called the triple point of water where all three phases exist simultaneously. So I wanted them to research some of that. But it ended up being a discussion about, you know, the dog being alive or dead or whatever. And the woman that ran the program says, I don't like you killing animals.
Your science makes me sad. Okay, so rule number one for a technocrat is be good. Rule number two is
don't kill any animals.
Don't talk about science if it makes anyone uncomfortable, even if it means progress. Oh, wait, no, never mind. Yeah, that's ridiculous. And yet, I understand, you know. I just saw a thing on the guy who did Jurassic Park, who was the main claymation guy for Jurassic Park, and also he did all the Star Wars movies. And, of course, he's really bummed when they were doing Jurassic Park because midstream they decided to go to that was their first really great CGI movie.
Right.
And they developed a lot of the techniques that people use in 3D graphics now. So one of the things I forgot what I was going to say about this. It was about, I segued one too many times.
From claymation?
Yeah. No, it was from claymation. Oh, yeah. So he, thank you. I don't know how I... You just had to say the
Hurry.
Word. How does
Hurry.
That work? You just had to say the word claymation to me, even though I just said it, and it didn't register when I said it, but you said it. And
my
it
inflection was my inflection.
It was your inflection. You have a great, beautiful inflection. So it was the problem. He made a video on his own. It was supposed to be an educational video about dinosaurs, and it was very scientific. His aim was scientific accuracy. It's before Jurassic Park, so it was almost Jurassic Park level, and this is what got him the gig.
Uh-huh.
But it was claymation. No schools would buy it because it was too brutal. The dinosaurs were killing each other. It was too bloody. And he's like, the kids will love it. In my opinion, he was right. The kids
right.
would love it.
They would.
The kids, you know, kids are inexperienced. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
You know, that's the mistake I think a lot of adults make.
I think we coddle kids a lot too much nowadays.
Oh, my God,
as opposed to when we were all kids.
I think it has virtue to a point.
Yeah. But everybody can't be a winner. Right. Everybody mm-hmm. can't be number one. You know.
Yeah, I think you show me if you treated a 4-year-old like an 8-year-old in front of me, I'm going to be mad at you.
Right.
If you treat a 12-year-old like an 8-year-old in front of me, I'm going to be mad at you. I'm going to be mad at you.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
So yeah, which is the same. Right. Anyway, you get the picture, right?
Yes.
You know, it depends on their age. It really does. The development. You know, I mean, there's good science behind it too. It's not like just why are people ignoring that anyway. I mean, I know social science is the weak science, but come on. You know, when you do enough surveys and it starts to be a pattern, people. All right, so what is, I don't even know what time it is.
It's 10:14.
10:14. Oh, wow. We are partying, people. Is anybody dying here? Am I killing you by keeping you here? You
I can just go got here, so.
Okay, get a few more questions. Fashionably late.
Mm-hmm.
She's here for an hour. She's gone.
All right, yes. Ooh. All right, so here, this is kind of one where I'm going to butt out until the end of this one. But I actually got into a great argument with a cybersecurity guy. What is the best IT security model look like? Are we talking about zone defense, where typically that's a cybersecurity kind of view where you're looking at it holistically and it's the whole network and you're protecting everything at once? Or is it man on man? Are you, you know, or is it better when you're dealing with all the individual elements and working from
onion.
The ground up?
I think layered.
Onion, yeah.
It's layered.
You have to have a layered approach.
So both?
I've dealt with some where it's turned the computer off.
Well, that's the ultimate yeah. in zone security,
they
right?
They don't let anything through. They turn everything off.
But yeah, the best way to do
both,
it.
Both, right? Well, you just broke my model. I mean, I'm talking to you.
You have to protect each layer. Yeah. You have to protect each layer. You have to protect your perimeter. You have to protect the data. You have to
Definitely.
Protect the endpoints. You
right.
have to protect the network. At each layer, you have to have protection because people are going to get through each various
layer.
You have to be monitoring logs.
So zone security in layers all the way down to the physical, to the bottom up
yeah.
kind of pieces.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's cool.
And you need to have visibility.
Are you listening, cybersecurity people? Yeah. It's not just enough to protect the network and then just let the machines just fall over dead on you.
No, definitely not.
Well, you need smoke.
Because you only need one entry point, right? I mean, you know, it's not enough to just have a nice wall and a Rottweiler outside. You actually put the locks on the doors.
Right.
Lock the doors.
Yeah, and actually lock them, yeah.
Right.
And check them once in a while and make sure they're locked.
And you have to have an armed guard inside, and you have to lock your file cabinets.
That's right. And then also it helps if you don't do anything valuable, so no one wants to steal anything.
but you have to remember that the hackers, they have time is on their side. They could spend weeks and weeks and weeks trying to get in their target, and they only have to be right once. You
that's
have to
right.
be perfect every single day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's true. Advanced. So yeah, that's the advanced persistent threat component of it.
Yep.
So that was kind of, I was joking before, but, and of course, you're not wrong, right? Air gapping is the ultimate protection.
I've worked in places where
you
that,
too.
That was a theory.
You're both air gapping, so, you know, air gapping is awesome. Mm-hmm. I air gap.
It's not perfect.
It's not perfect, no. It's definitely not. Give me examples of it not being perfect, because that would be
if
fun.
If people gain physical access.
Right, of course.
And that's easier than you would think.
Air gapping plus encryption could be solid.
That could be solid, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But nothing's perfect.
Nothing's perfect, right. Today's encryption is tomorrow's relic.
When you're out there, if you're like a pen tester and you're trying to get access, these guys, they're as ruthless as the bad guys are.
Right.
I mean, they'll do basic things like
if they're not,
car.
They're not doing their job.
Right. There was a hacker that
said... Let me repeat that again. If your pen tester isn't ruthless, he's not doing his job.
Yeah.
Ruthless.
There was a hacker that got access to banking data, and the way he got access was he followed a guy that he knew had access. So on the back of his minivan, he had a picture of him, his wife, and his two kids. The kids were playing had soccer balls, so he knew that they played soccer, and they had to go to soccer practice. So the wife probably took him to soccer practice. He knew the hours the guy worked, figured out the soccer practice hours, got into the guy's house when nobody was home, got his card, and then was able to get access to the building.
Holy fuckaroonie.
Yeah. It goes, I
wow.
mean, these people are, there's a lot of money involved, and it's not,
hey folks,
they're not doing it for fun.
Psychopaths are real. They don't give a shit.
Oh, but are they psychopaths? They're doing it for money.
Yeah. Well, you know, easily, it doesn't have to.
They're criminals. But sure, yeah.
There are plenty of people out there who are perfectly capable of resolving themselves into it. And then every bad guy is not a psychopath. In fact, actually, a lot of psychopaths tend to be very rational and logical
right.
and are coherent, productive parts of society. I'm not picking on... I can't believe I was a defense psychopath. But it's really true. They really are not all bad.
Right.
But if you just say, if there is a psychopath that's bad, look the fuck out, man. Because
yeah.
there is nothing you can do. They are the perfect advanced persistent threat. They will just wait until you step into their trap.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just such basic stuff that everybody leaves clues about their whole entire life out there that people can use to gain a little bit more access, and then a little bit more, and a little bit more. And as I said, time is on their side.
That's right.
So, you know, if it takes them 6 months to get into your infrastructure, so be it.
Okay. All right. So, any other input on that? Artie's pretty quiet on that one. I think you see the threat, considering how your
yeah,
product is on.
Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion, really.
Okay. Cool. So, let's see. So, Oh, this is a great one. You're going to love this one. So this is not entirely my fault. This is my son's idea, but actually, credit to him, it's a brilliant question. Are there multiple universes? Are there really multiple universes? Are there? Actually, his question was, are there really infinite universes? And
why
can we travel
at me?
To them? Anyone.
Yeah,
we all. I have an opinion on this, too, but I'll go last. So.
Of course.
Yeah.
So the spend a day with me, I'll show you.
Yeah, the rule.
Nice.
The rule in physics is that if it's not forbidden, it's allowed.
Right. Well, that's the rule in science. Forget physics.
There's nothing that forbids it. The guy that created the theory, Hugh Everett III, there's a book about him, actually, interesting book. His son is in the punk band The Eels.
No way.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's Hugh Everett's son. Anyway, Hugh Everett was exactly the kind of guy that we were just talking about earlier that would pick up women on airplane flights as he was going to conferences.
Okay.
But as long as
they didn't say no, it's all good.
So nobody believed his thesis when he published it, but nobody could disprove it.
Right.
So the point is that you have this physical calculation, and it's not disallowed that whenever you do a measurement on any particular system, that system can exist in one of many infinite states, and as soon as you do the measurement, you pick a state. It's like pachinko. The mm-hmm. ball's going to go down one out of the 2^64 ways that it could go, mm-hmm. and that's the reality for that ball.
Right.
Next time you drop the ball, then it goes a different one.
Right.
Now, just imagine that happening simultaneously to everything in the universe, and then there you go.
Right. Yeah, so that is the...
So the short answer is yes.
The short answer is yes, and good luck disproving it, mofo. Yeah. Yeah, so I want to hear Rich's take on this.
Well, there is a bunch of meditation techniques to do timeline jumping, so yeah, you can do it.
Timeline jump. What do you find when you go to other timelines?
The same shit you have here.
Oh, well,
just slightly different.
Well, hugely disappointing. I was hoping like Rick and Morty kind of wackiness.
Yeah,
where chair people were eating people pizza or something,
Google the Mandela effect.
Yeah,
you'll see a whole bunch of.
Oh yeah, yeah. A lot of people swear there's an event that happened. The Mandela effect specifically. I know that there was a print and a retraction in a paper. There was one thing that might have been part of the cause of that.
Well, go through and look at all the examples they give and see if you can identify with any of that.
Right.
I mean, it's personal validation.
Yeah. Well, I'm with Arnie on this. I mean, if it isn't disproven, it's possible. So I'm not disagreeing with you.
Right, but you can't know them.
Right.
That's the problem. You can't go from one to another.
Right. So traveling, you're saying traveling between them is impossible.
You can't make the pachinko ball go upwards.
Right.
Well, not this reality.
Well, hold on. Wait, that
is reality.
Oh, I'm going to throw physics at you. So, Boltzmann basically said the teacup will reassemble if you run the numbers long enough.
So I was discussing this at the blockchain talk that I gave this morning.
Can I give them the background?
Yeah, sure.
We'll come back to you.
Yeah.
So Boltzmann was one of the people who figured out...
First American PhD in physics.
First American PhD in physics.
Shot himself in the head.
Oh yeah, well there was that too.
Yeah,
it's depressing. I guess the whole thing was pretty depressing.
Nobody believed what he was doing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So essentially, what it was is he was he figured out a way to calculate volume if it was fluctuating over the density of states in a particular area. And was able to calculate that in motion, and it was actually critical to getting past like the throw parts at it kind of steam engine mentality that people were doing in physical and engineering, the engineering world. Of course, it was critical to physics later. So essentially, what it was, it's a formula to calculate how much stuff is inside. And this is exactly right up your alley with what you guys are doing.
Right. So what he did is he calculated he came out with a way of calculating the number of states that a physical entity could exist in. So if you have gas in a box, for instance, you have, say 10 molecules of gas in a box. They're all floating around in different places. But suppose you put them in like an egg crate type situation where one gas molecule is in one crate, one cell, another is in another cell, and you just count up the different cells that they could possibly occupy. And that very large number just for 10 gas molecules, it's a very huge number, and that's the number of states. most of them are available to you,
right,
at any particular time. However, in this room, there is a state where all the gas molecules are up in that corner and we all suffocate.
Right.
The probability of that state occurring
is astronomically
is so
impossible.
Astronomically tiny.
Right.
That it would take you several universes' lifetimes in order to have it occur randomly.
And he got a crap ton of stuff from his peers based on the fact that people didn't understand that part of it.
That's right.
So, you know, someone would be like, well, you're saying this teacup can reassemble, and yes.
Right, so it's all... That's
you know,
all
if I drink, you know, like if you drop a teacup on the floor,
right. Psh, so the base,
there is a universe where it goes... Right.
So it's the basis of, you know, thermodynamics is now called statistical mechanics, and that's the basis of it, his Boltzmann statistics. And he's got a constant named after him, the Boltzmann constant.
God, I hated thermodynamics in college.
Yeah,
so just like time travel has a travel in an interesting direction, traveling between universes also has an interesting state, which is the more esoteric the universe, the more interesting it would be.
But you see, the thing is, it's like people saying that they're a time traveler. Well, we're all time travelers. We all go forward in time. We just can't
Are you
going
to ruin Back to the Future for me? Because that's a great movie.
So you can't go back. You can just go forward. We're traveling through time and space right now.
Yes.
And so...
I mean, freaking even Led Zeppelin knew that.
That's right.
Exactly. So, you know, I never noticed it. I'm talking about it.
So here's an interesting experiment that people actually have tried. Wacko physicists have tried this experiment. We put up a sign on Saturday, right in the hallway, that says, free beer and pizza tomorrow.
Okay.
And then we sit around and wait to see if anybody shows up from the future. And guess what? This experiment has been tried, really.
Okay.
Nobody shows up. Nobody ever shows up.
Maybe it's just the wrong people doing this experiment.
Maybe.
try it with A-listers.
But you're talking about hungry graduate students.
Yeah, that's right. They're pretty hungry. They can figure it out.
That's right. Nobody from the future ever shows up.
The box molecule thing is 1.6% probability. That's what I found.
To do what?
For the molecules in the box to go through the corner, it was a 1.6% probability.
It depends on the size of the box.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true. If it's three molecules, it's still it's going to be very low.
1.6 is a very high probability. I don't know what the size of the box is and how many molecules you're talking about.
I don't see the size, but they're referring to three molecules in the box.
Oh
yeah.
So, just...
That's, deep space has more molecules per cubic centimeter than that. deep space has about 10 to the 5th gas molecules per cubic centimeter. So you're talking, that's just a thought experiment to do the calculation.
That's a shit ton.
Right.
So here's the interesting thing, and this kind of goes back to what Rich was saying a little bit. So, you know, of course, the fact that we can... There's a quantum experiment where it's known as the split pattern experiment. That's probably the wrong name of it. Anyway, where you're throwing photons
it's the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen setup, and it's about the fact that two photons that were created from the same neutral atom will by nature have to have. Well, all right, we'll go through it. So you have a cesium atom whose spin is zero.
Right.
So just it is. So photons have spin one. So when that cesium atom decays into two photons, one photon goes this way, the atom is at rest, one photon goes this way, the other photon goes that way. The cesium atom had spin zero. So this has to have spin up and this has to have spin down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It makes zero. Not only that, but they have to have exactly opposite directions and the speed of light since they're photons, because the initial atom was at rest. So the momentum is zero. So now the two momenta have to add to zero, so it's exactly opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this photon has spin up and this photon has spin down, right? However, quantum mechanics says you don't know the spin of this photon until you measure it.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely indeterminate. It's both up and down. The cat is both alive and dead until you open the box.
Right, sure.
Cat.
Right.
Schrodinger's
so now
cat.
I decide to measure this photon.
Right.
What happens to this one?
Goes the other way.
How did it know?
Right.
It's twice. They're traveling away at the speed of light. They can't communicate.
Right.
So how did this one know to be spin down if you measure this one to spin up? Not only that, but if you measure again further on with a polarizer at right angles, and you say, now the spin is this way, this photon has to be this way.
Right.
And Einstein hated that.
Yeah. Well, everybody hates that. People still hate that.
But now the experiment, I just, oddly enough, was at Bell Labs listening to the guy that did the final proof of the experiment. And that is, so now you're detecting these photons. And a lot of scientists had very, very serious challenges saying, well, the detectors had some sort of, they were connected to the same, by the same power supply, they had some sort of communication. You got to eliminate any possible chance that they're communicating with each other. So what they did is they triggered the detectors with other photons that weren't correlated. Scientists said, well, you know, they could be correlated. They could be correlated somehow when you're doing your setup. The final experiment was done. The detectors were triggered by photons from a galaxy 100 million light years away.
Mm-hmm.
Those photons were emitted before there were humans.
Right, of course.
And they could have no idea that this experiment was ever going to be done. And that's what triggered the detectors, and the statistics were correct, according to quantum mechanics. This photon and this photon were separated at birth. So the guy explained it in terms of a simple analogy. If you meet a twin, but you don't know they're a twin,
right?
And you're talking, and she says, I'm a twin, you automatically know what the other twin looks like.
Right.
No matter where it is.
Right.
He said that's the best way to think of it in terms of...
Right.
Everyday situations.
So it is an automated mechanism. It's not one that's affected by...
You're looking for a rational explanation. I would say that it's in the nature of space, time, and quantum mechanics that causes this.
Okay. So, right. This is good.
Another famous physicist said that if you understand quantum mechanics, you don't understand quantum mechanics.
So
it really is only a mathematical prescription for the results of experiments.
So wait, where do you see where I go with this? So there are actually. Okay. I'll come back to that. So really, there's been an experiment where people were able to affect the outcome of a probability of either a machine or a computer marginally, but not zero, by thinking intensely about it.
Are you talking about the Princeton?
Yeah, there's been a few different
Princeton
ones. There's been ones with electron-based computers, you know, binary computers like we think of them. There's also been ones with physical, where they have waterfall cascades where balls are falling, okay, and people try to affect the outcome, and there are marginal effects. It doesn't matter whether the effect is very, very low. It just matters that the effect isn't zero.
Right.
Now, I'm sure people could argue this experimentation is, you know, unlikely, and I can disprove it, they did the experiment wrong. But let's just suppose it's true for a second. The thing that's interesting about that is meditative states could actually be, theoretically, a way, maybe with some sort of amplifier to be more effective, to travel between universes, between one outcome and another. Now, of course, again, the key is that they only marginally affected the outcome. Right. And I'm looking at the brain as an electrical machine, right? You know, electricity, the electrons being following a lot of the same rules as photons, for example. Mm-hmm. Not all the same rules, but you know, and that may be some explanation. Actually, I think we emit photons too, don't we? Human beings emit photons.
Not visible ones.
Not visible ones, but we do emit non-zero amounts
of photons. Well, everything.
You kind of have a nice glow.
Everything does, yeah. Right?
Every accelerating charge emits photons of
right.
some frequency.
Right, right. So we definitely are capable of generating photons, even if it's in an esoteric, non-direct
way. Yeah, so weak and so low frequency, it wouldn't affect them.
Right. But, again, since we don't know the underlying mechanism by which they're connected, you know, looking at it from like a string theory kind of point of view, that there's a parallel realm where things are, like, just much like the gravitational plane, that there might be another plane underneath where things are
affected in a way
we don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, look, maybe there's an effect. I don't know anything about the experiment. I tend to think that there's no effect.
Logically, my brain keeps going, oh, this is bullshit, don't even talk about it.
Well,
but you know what? I mean...
A professor of mine, as an undergraduate, gave almost like an essay course in physics, but he gave as a final project a series of problems that you could write a paper on. And one of them was, what is the greater perturbation on your brain, a packet of a neurotransmitter going between the synapses, the gravitational interaction there, which is tiny because you're talking about very small masses, or one gram of matter moving a meter on Alpha Centauri.
right,
to compare the two gravitational effects. Mm-hmm. And nobody did that paper, but I did sort of think about it, and I wondered if they were of the order of the same scale. They might be.
Right.
But you have...
So gravitation's subject to the inverse square law, if you're
that's
not
right.
aware.
Yes.
So it gets chopped in half as it moves a certain distance away in
right.
force. So it's very, very, very minuscule.
But it never goes to zero.
From Alpha Centauri
to
here.
It never goes to zero.
Right. Never quite zero. It doesn't right. It doesn't actually hit
neither
zero.
Do the
just approaches.
Neither do electromagnetic forces. But
just means we're too stupid to measure it. Anyway,
but there's a there's a lot of problems of scale that you're when you talk about these things. One is that if you say take a standard atom, a nucleus, oxygen, say, or even hydrogen, you have the nucleus and you have the electron shells, and people have a picture of what that is. But if you took some standard atom. And you say the nucleus was the size of a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
The first shell of electrons are the grandstands, are the bleacher seats in the Astrodome.
Right.
Now you told the atom is mostly empty space. That's roughly the
right.
scale. The size of a baseball is the nucleus, and the first shell is 600 feet away.
Right.
So, things just go shooting through. We're mostly empty space.
Right.
Things go shooting right through us without any effect at all.
We're just this giant interference pattern. We're not we're not stuff
right.
like we think of ourselves.
Right. But again, that's
interfering,
scale,
interfering, that, right. interfering.
And, but that scale is thousands of times smaller than the scale of neurons.
Mm-hmm.
And string theory is hundreds of thousands of times even smaller than that.
Yeah.
So
we're just too stupid to measure it. Yeah, I know.
Well, you can't.
All science is good. All science is done in the periphery anyway.
Right.
So it's not fair to say just because something's tiny doesn't mean it's insignificant.
Nobody wants to measure things that we already know.
Right.
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 In fact, you're going to get me talking on physics. I could go all night. There was another guy.
I'll let you off the hook after.
There's another guy when single crystal silicon wafers became available, he was able to cut two slits in the silicon crystal. And now he had what was basically Polaroids, but for atoms instead of light, right? Because now he's using the crystal as like the Polaroid filters. And he was able to show the interference pattern caused by the gravitational interaction. So I went to this talk. The talk got very well publicized. And one of my professors said, what did he do it for? He's measuring what we already know is there.
Right. Well, because what you only have to find an anomaly once, right? In a consistent fashion, of course.
Yeah, but
you only have to find a consistent anomaly once.
Yeah. So anyway, that's
the whole point is that no, but
everybody knows gravity was there. So
right, you know what?
Everybody
no, that's
knows
kind of fucked up because you know what? This is just a point of science is that everybody keeps doing each other's experiments over and over and over, and then once in a while somebody finds something new. Duh.
Well, the big ones don't get done over and over again because they have hundreds of collaborators and cost millions of dollars.
I know. We need more money. Yep. That's the answer. We need more money. Yeah, so right. Send money to.
Call this number down here.
All right. Well, thank you for entertaining my insanity.
And, yeah, well, does the dog freeze or does he boil?
I think he sublimates. Yeah. I'm pretty convinced.
I think he just explodes.
So getting back to the other thing you were talking about.
That was another option.
Oh, yeah. Rich Rosenthal, go for it.
Well, you were talking about having an effect on other things. If you look up something called the Maharishi effect, they took 10,000 people and they were meditating on world peace, for example, and there was a noticeable drop in crime over the next few months as a result of that.
Well, what the hell's their problem? Sorry. No, that's the wrong reaction. Sorry.
Well, I mean, you're talking about having an effect on things by...
What peace, man?
Well, having an effect on things by observing, right?
Yes, yeah, no.
You know, the Heisenberg principle.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, so, of course, the strict translation of the Heisenberg principle is just that, it's just a freaking principle on particles, and we can't have any effect on it, just like we were talking about.
Well, but you need what are called canonical variables. They have to have a balancing rate.
You know, this is the problem with human beings. There's no control. We can't measure ourselves because we're constantly trying to break out of our own patterns. And some of that's just smarts, but once in a while, you could get more physics-based with that, I think. I think it's possible. Anyway, we're not ruling it out because science just ignores.
So the book is about Hugh Everett III, and he's the guy that caused this whole discussion we're having.
Rock on,
right now.
Dude! I like that guy.
and his son did not realize who he was.
Really?
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, that's the usual thing with kids.
Right.
So somebody was asking on watching the show, asking what a technocrat is. So the short answer is, I have a really great cartoon. If you just go to thetechnocratlive.com and you can click on the link in the archives, the video archives, and you'll find it there. But that's a cop-out. So a technocrat is a person who is a technical specialist in a field that other people either can't learn or don't have the time or the energy or the resources to learn, and so are making technical decisions that affect their life. You know, it's kind of a bland, boring thing, but it has a major impact. People are making this, particularly in computers, this has been happening a lot lately, but also in any field, people are making decisions for each other, and they don't really understand them. And it bothers me, because part of this is we're in a republic. We're in a democracy, and democracy, this matters. Should people have to be informed to make good decisions in a democracy. You know, they don't know what's going on. What are they supposed to do? You know, if you don't really understand how things work technically, I'm not saying you have to be a wizard at everything, but maybe a bird's eye view is called for.
You know? I'm going to be contrarian.
Go for it.
Only because you're seeming to say that you have to be educated to vote.
I'm not. I am.
I never heard that. Where did you hear that?
No, I hear what. I understand what you're saying. Know. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you said,
I didn't hear it. I didn't say it.
No, I said I didn't. I didn't say you said it.
Okay,
I said
yeah.
You were very close.
I implied it.
That's right.
But actually, I didn't imply that direction at all with that at all.
That's right.
I don't think that people need to be educated to vote. I want people to be educated so their vote is more effective.
Right.
I think what's happening is that people aren't educated, and that's why their votes are ineffective. When crazy policies and when crazy people are elected and crazy policies are enacted, that's a direct evidence of people not being informed enough about making good decisions.
A lot of people vote against their best interests.
Yeah. Agreed.
I think a lot of people just vote
so,
emotional
based. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That is
emotional.
I wasn't implying that, and
absolutely.
I don't.
No facts.
I'm not saying that we should create a test or something, because that's not really democracy, is it? But
right, no, it's in fact, yes.
I'm okay with self-selection. I'm okay when people opt out. And actually, I encourage people, if they don't know what's going on, to opt out. But I also equally encourage them to find out what's going on. Right? I think that's fair.
Yep.
Yeah, and people make their own choice. So think carefully about that. But anyway, so technocrats have a huge effect on your life. Every time your phone pisses you off, or your car needs a reboot, or your television crashes in the middle of a show, or your DVR doesn't record something.
Don't call me.
Yeah, this and that and the other thing. No, I will not fix your computer. So that's what a technocrat is. Does that make sense? I hope that was a good answer. All right, so thanks for the question, and I'm okay with them on the show, so keep them coming.
We also got we got another one regarding for Arnie. She said, what about the apple experiment? You cut an apple in half, put one half in the jar, and say nice things to it, and the other half in the jar every day, and say mean things about it. The one you speak meanly to tilts quicker, is what it says.
Well, there's been several tests like that, and it's been confirmed sometimes, and it's not been confirmed
it.
Other times, so it's still an open test.
But didn't they do the test, the Japanese?
I have no idea. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Wait, didn't they take ice cubes, and they subjected...
It would go over the wine.
This is long
as
actually,
it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Subjected the ice cube, water... When they subject something like to like really harsh music and the ice cubes or whatever.
Yeah, the crystals had different formations.
Yeah, crystals have been compared to like really mellow music.
But it's been the experiment's been done multiple times, and it's always come out with different results.
Mm-hmm. That means that's a null result.
Sometimes it's worked and sometimes it hasn't. So it's
a wash. It means that there's no answer. It means that the experiment is a failure.
Well,
there's no effect.
Was it a failure, or was it done under non-controlled circumstances?
It just has to be different than chance to be a failure.
That's right.
To be a success, I mean, to be different than chance, right? It doesn't. You may not understand what's happening, but if you can create an experiment that gives you results that are different than chance, it's not a failure. You just can't explain it.
What about plants that react well to, I say, classical music compared to plants that react very badly to harsh music?
Right.
None of these experiments are controlled. And the results are all apocryphal.
I mean, it could just be your breathing
and the
thing. They like CO2, you know.
The music experiments were confirmed.
No, impossible. No, they weren't. I mean, we'll have to just disagree on it.
Nice.
Yeah. You know what? Try it yourself. This is actually good, and this is what people need to freaking do. You know, all right, I'm sorry. I'm normally very open-minded, but I don't want to be so open-minded my brain falls out. You flat earth people, what is wrong with you? Seriously, what is wrong with you? All right, I understand if you can't.
On Mark's show?
What?
Yesterday on Mark's show, he said that he had a friend who believed that there were two moons. One you see in Europe, one you see in America.
Oh. The Rose, yeah.
Yeah, and that moon you see in Europe is flat.
Yeah, that's
No, that's the moon you see in America.
Yeah, it was based. They based their theory on the Tatooine two sun fiction in Star Wars. Which binary stars are real, but that's.
There are two suns, and the suns were flat too.
What the.
Somebody posted on Twitter, they reposted something they saw from somebody else, saying that, I understand the world is flat, I need to put in a swimming pool, how far down can I dig before it's too far?
Not far enough.
You know, I used to say stuff like this before the flat earth thing got popular, just for kicks.
Right.
So I wonder how much of that is what's going on. But it's sort of, like, totally serious. If this is something that you're actually confused on, you can do an experiment for about $250, $300 that is dirt cheap, and you can find out for yourself. Right? Remember, open source, you can have a whole operating system. You can put an open source operating system on a camera. There's not a lot of them, but you can find them. So you can control the code that's controlling the camera. For sure, you can do this with a Raspberry Pi. A USB camera. Put them in a styrofoam cooler. Go buy a Mylar balloon. MIT did this experiment. And actually, some people in Lilac did this. So I saw the photos firsthand, and I trusted the people with the gear. So I'm 1 degree of separation away from proving to myself that the Earth is round. Put this stuff in a cooler. Buy a Mylar balloon. They sell them. They're a couple $100. It's the most expensive part of the experiment. Put a lighter-than-air gas in the balloon, typically hydrogen, right? Or helium, either one. Helium? Was it helium? Sorry, my bad.
Hydrogen kind of goes boom.
All right, helium, whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, something lighter than air. Put helium in the balloon and send the balloon up into space. You will have some failures. It might cost $1,000 because you blow it a couple times. There's websites that will help you calculate the trajectory so you can recover the box at the end of the experiment, right? And then all you have to do is just let the thing go, have it have a GPS sender so it can tell you where it is. The GPS sender is not part of the experiment, it's just part of recovery.
Right.
Same thing with the trajectory. So those can be lies. It doesn't matter if they're lies. If you recover it, it wasn't a lie or it was a miscalculation. It doesn't matter. It just matters you got the box back. That camera with that open source operating system that you can look at every damn line of code to make sure nobody's injecting some kind of curvature into your photos, right? If you understand code and you can look at that code, you can then look at the series of pictures, and eventually that thing will get high enough that the planet looks like this. Okay? It's a curve. It's blatantly a curve.
Wait. Couldn't we just stick like some sticks in the ground from like two different locations, like one from water and one from New York?
I don't want people to do that because it's the kind of thing where people can argue back and forth about
what?
The details of it forever.
No details. No details.
It's geometry.
Yeah, you wait till noon.
Right.
And you stick a yardstick in the ground and you measure the shadow.
Shadow,
and
exactly.
You fly down to your grandparents' house in Boca Raton, mm-hmm. and you stick a stick in the ground at noon the next day,
right.
That shadow is much smaller.
Right.
Right, okay, fair enough. Yes.
Explain that.
And you can measure the difference.
Well, obviously, I can't explain it. The Earth is round.
Because it's different on different days.
I mean, I've been on a plane across the Pacific, and I watched the date, and I went over the date line, and I watched day turn to night, and I did the calculations, and I knew when that would happen. It happened when I expected it. That's a successful experiment. I know the Earth is round. Yeah. But also, this freaking, you don't have to have any friends to do this experiment. You don't have to trust anyone.
But why would you even want to
get an off plane?
Why entertain the argument?
Here's why I think this is.
I just want to say something about this. This is important that people do this. Science is about collaboration, and it's important
it's
that you
fun.
Experiment. Yeah, it is
about
having
fun.
This is fun. You could put a thing in your little thing, like they put a monkey in their it was the Island Lab guys that did this. They put a monkey in their styrofoam thing, a little plastic monkey, and then after forever and ever, that is now a space monkey because it was in near space.
Did it evaporate or did it? Blow
it was
up?
Plastic, so none of the above. But there was no there was no liquids in it. But that would have been exciting if that happened because then no one would know why.
And you don't know if it's alive or dead until you open a box.
It's a $400 experiment. You're hurting yourself. At least try the experiment and then say why it failed.
But I don't understand, to what end is all of society trying to make people think the world is round?
But you know what? Because the problem is this kind of like almost elitism from technocrats saying, oh, we control the information. We control the data. You can't get a degree without us. You can't, you know, you can't get credentials or listened to or authenticated. And I think that like that's what people are reacting to. They're not reacting to science producing bad data. They're getting this kind of condescending down the glasses browbeating kind of view of the scientific world. And it's not even accurate in and of itself. It's the problem. Arnie said it before. Experiments are really freaking expensive to do stuff at the periphery these days.
Right.
But people are superimposing that cost, and they're going, okay, no, it's that they don't want us to be part of this, that we're being excluded because we're not part of the elite or something, that they're imagining some sort of elite. And I think it's just a normal human condition. So it's our job as technocrats to encourage people to do science experiments, even if they seem stupid and juvenile to us, right? Oh, duh, I know what's going to happen. Do it anyway. Just do the experiment. Please. Right? Because the worst that could happen is they're no better off, but the best that could happen is we have a new scientist.
Also, I mean, why can't you just why can't you just call up somebody in Japan and say, is it dark or light out?
Right, right.
They'd be lying to you.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
No. I mean, you're like about how you know, people are just,
is it daytime there
because
or
they
is
don't
it
have
nighttime?
Any because they're not cool like you. They don't have any Japanese friends. You know?
We need to
seriously
get aliens to come.
Right? Of course, you can do the same thing with Europe, right?
Yeah,
the same thing with South America.
Right.
Or
you could do the same thing from California to New York, but the people say,
most people don't freaking leave their hometowns.
Right.
And that's, you get out, you know? But even if you can't afford, all this stuff costs money.
But
the
again,
thing
well,
is this Mylar balloon experiment, it's so cheap and illegal. They don't even care. If a plane runs it over, the plane runs it over. It's totally legal with the FAA.
So
you don't
Steve,
even have to register
the,
a flight.
The answer to that, I think it was a woman that asked the question, or a girl. But the answer to that is, in order to approve an effect like that, you would have to do the experiment about 100 times.
Wow.
Okay. So, you know, this
thank you. That's what I'm looking for.
This occurred in high school with my son and his best friend, and they were trying to decide whether wooden bats or metal bats hit baseballs further. So my son's friend Michael was on my front lawn we strung a ball from one branch and we strung the bat from the other and kept swinging it, and he did 100 strikes of the metal bat on the ball, and we measured how high the ball went up after the bat hit it, but every once in a while it would be a foul ball. Mm-hmm. And so when he graphed the data, he got like two humps instead of one. Mm-hmm. So his mother and Michael, they said, well, what do we do now? It's two humps. I said, well, you got to take more data. His mother said, we're not taking more data. Forget it. We're going to write it up the way it is.
Or they could just fake it. No,
yeah, that's
no
right.
Science studies have ever done that.
Yeah. Right.
You do like every good scientist, just throw away the stuff you don't like.
And you know
like.
What? And sometimes that's the key. Is if you're actually trying to start doing experiments, you may find a fake experiment. Don't be surprised, you know. Find other experiments that confirm what you're trying to find out another way. Don't give up because you find a fake experiment. It's going to happen. The journals are filled with them, particularly on the $100 million plus category, because who the hell is going to retry that stuff?
Right.
You know, and this is actually, that has been credible scientific sources, you know, scientific journals, scientific news publications have said this before. This is science, because nobody can replicate these things. You know, they just trust each other. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, nobody can be mad at science because they're not rich. That's nuts. But at the same time, you know,
most scientists aren't.
The higher up the chain you work, the more likely you are to find a failure. Like, this doesn't work how you think it works. All right. Anyway, sorry. I want everyone to be a scientist, right? Isn't that what STEM is about?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, I want everyone to question everything and to be skeptical and to jump in there and show me why I'm wrong. So, yeah, do that Apple experiment 100 times and we'll answer your question, I promise. Show us the data.
just a quick note on STEM. I think the new thing in schools now, and I think it's actually good, is theme. They add art to it, and art, not just art drawing or
music and everything.
Music, yeah, and everything. I think that's a really important component.
You know,
and most tech people are into music,
yes,
whether they listen,
right,
or they,
right,
play.
Well, the best programmers are musicians too.
Right, and they're artists. Yeah. And
so we've had some debate here before about whether musicians and like producers and directors and writers even are technocrats, and clearly to some degree they are.
Yeah.
So there is some crossover even in that kind of elitist,
absolutely,
field, you know, to the degree that we are subject to the media that influences us. Yeah,
but
I think they kind of are.
Music's being used in like supermarkets to like choose your like emotions.
Yes.
Or how the industry's like guided by its select people and producers to go a certain way.
Right, absolutely. They freaking, every supermarket's catering to me right now. It's all 80s pop. You know, they're trying to get me to buy more spaghetti. You know, with 80s pop.
What the brand?
That's what they're doing.
Right, right. Yeah. So, for sure. So, I think this. I don't know if it's as strong, but I don't know if it has to be strong or not. It just has to be more influence, unreplicatable or difficult to replicate influence. And I,
yep,
think that's the case, yeah. You know, just look at, you know, Bernays and Freud and the whole marketing, you know, the whole marketing complex. You know, there's a lot of names out there now. So, all right. So, next question, and we've got two more, and then I think we'll call it a night. What do you think, guys? All right.
Sure.
So, government regulation of social media, yes or no?
No.
And why?
I'm torn. I abhor government intervention in anything having to do with speech, but I think there's the anonymization of people has made people feel free to speak the way nobody would speak in if somebody was standing in front of you.
What you talking about? Big old man. I don't like your face.
So like I think that the
what, it's not normal to talk to people like that?
Yeah.
It's way worse on YouTube.
Oh my,
gentle there.
Yeah, or you look on Twitter or Reddit or something like that. I mean, these places are like, it's like a cesspool. And I cannot believe that these people actually speak like this in real life.
Well, the question is, who gets to decide what you're like?
Yeah, right. Well, that's my
problem.
That's my problem. But if they weren't anonymous,
I'm not saying that you're not correct that they shouldn't be saying what they're saying.
Right.
But who gets to decide what they're allowed to say?
But if they weren't anonymous, would they still be saying?
No, they wouldn't. Well, you know, it's the same thing like with emails. People think because they're sitting in their house and they're protected and there's no one's around, they can respond nasty to an email and they,
right,
send it out, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I didn't know it was going to have an impact on anything.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But but emails aren't anonymous, which you,
right,
know.
Right. Well, it's the same
right
concept.
But yeah, like on you look on Twitter. I mean, people say horrendous things that you would hope they would never say in real life, and they have every right to say it. But they shouldn't. I don't think they should necessarily be allowed to hide behind the anonymity, because that's what, right, gives them. That's what gives them the stones to
there,
do.
There
it.
Are limits to speech, right? The example, you know, fire in a crowded theater.
Yeah.
And sometimes you do have a crowded theater, Mumbai, Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Philly.
These are crowded theaters.
Yep.
And so it's you know, there is a limit on that.
Even to some degree, like Columbine.
But right, again,
they knew they'd be famous.
But you know,
right,
the second amendment.
We made them famous. We should.
They knew they were going to be famous. They knew. They
no,
knew
the
what was going to happen. It was 100% predictable.
Right.
Yeah, but the media made them famous. If the media just ignored them, would never even say their name.
But no, they are the media. You put a GoPro on your head, you are the media.
No. Yeah. Well, Columbine was before that, but.
But now.
Yeah.
GoPros are on everything.
Right.
But the First Amendment rights were meant to protect a free press.
Mm-hmm.
Not people shouting threats on a street corner.
Right. But in the age of, or, you know, the contrary point to that is, what is free press? I mean, you know, isn't this just giant megacorps protecting their right to have a monopoly on journalism? I mean, journalism's anybody with one of these days, right?
Not really. No, it's no. Who, what,
I mean,
where, when, and why?
Who's to say I'm a shitbag if I video something?
No, but it's not journalism. It's just recording.
I think it is.
No.
I disagree with
you. No. Who, what, when, where, and why?
Okay, I can put all that stuff on my YouTube. If I put that up and I put that on my YouTube channel, then that's journalism.
That is. That's correct.
Yeah.
But
and there's plenty of people doing that, and some of them are the ones getting stomped on by the,
right, but the
censorship.
Right, but the underlying promise is that there was an observation of something.
Right.
If you just create something out of nothing, that's not
false witness versus a truth.
We're not talking about false witness. What's up?
Well, we kind of are, right? I mean, you know, if you could, you know, the risk is if you just let, if you don't have any vetting process. I understand what he's saying. If you don't have any vetting process, that someone could just go up there and say some craziness. You know, entertaining, but wrong.
But see, we were taught about, you know, who, what, when, why. But I think today's generation or today's kids who go to journalism school were never taught that.
Sure they are.
They're just taught to lie and whatever.
No,
it's like feel good.
No.
Look at the shit that they write.
No.
All right, fight.
any reputable reporting.
Oh, look at the New York Times. How many times have they been caught lying?
Yes, they have been caught a bunch.
Lying?
Well, not only have they been dead wrong.
Errors.
Oh my God, errors.
Retractions on page 50. Come on.
Name one.
I don't have
Hillary Clinton's going to win the election.
That's not a lie. It's a prediction.
It was a dead wrong prediction.
Yeah, but it's not a lie.
I know people who unsubscribe from the Times, so they.
But that's not the point. It's not a lie.
No.
Yeah.
It's not a lie.
We don't know.
Of course we you're ruining the language.
Well, so...
It's not a lie.
Just because I can't prove it is doesn't mean it isn't.
It's not a lie if I say tomorrow the sun will rise and it doesn't. It's not a lie.
If you say it as a physicist with your physicist hat on, yeah, maybe it is.
No, it isn't. It's a prediction. Right. A lie is
something... But isn't
something
that what the flat earth guys are doing?
A lie is contradictory to the truth, right. Not a prediction.
So the New York Times is saying, based on the polling, Hillary Clinton's going to win.
Right.
Then it's a lie.
No, but she didn't. Opinion is never a lie.
That's why you have the election. That's kind of like saying, based on the stats, the Jets are not going to win the Super Bowl.
That's a lie.
Well, what if the Jets do win the Super Bowl?
That's what I'm saying.
I didn't lie to you.
So hold on a second.
It's not a lie.
So maybe the real problem here is that people are conflating that the idea of predictions are critically important.
But they're not lies. Predictions can be wrong.
But I can make a prediction I know is going to be wrong.
That doesn't matter.
But it's a lie if I do that.
I think the example that you brought up.
It is not.
I'm gonna fart so hard that I'm gonna fly out of my chair.
Right.
It's a lie. I
we
just lied to you.
We don't know that until it's proven that you haven't done it.
No, nobody's ever done that in the history of farts. That's what I'm trying to say. It's obviously a lie.
I beg to differ.
Examples I really see, because I'm doing like a quick research, I guess, don't throw a topic, is I see there are times with the election stuff, how they were lying about some candidates versus others, and like the lies have been disproven, like debunked.
Like what?
Like I said, I didn't get examples. I'll scroll.
You don't have examples because they're not lies.
I'll show you after the show. I'll show you.
Oh, come on, man.
I'll just take a look through it.
Okay. Well,
an honest mistake is not a lie.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I agree that an honest mistake is not a lie, but what I'm saying is that people can hide behind the ruse of honest mistakes to tell lies.
I think the politicians...
Far afield.
You are way too honest with this world, man. Sometimes people are shady.
The New York Times is not shady. Neither is the Post.
Oh, my God.
Name one. You have not named one.
You're just... It doesn't...
You can't name one.
You can love the Times, and you can love the Inquirer, and you can love Fox, and you can love...
The National Enquirer doesn't lie either. Those are reporters think they're the best in the world because they get stories no one else can get.
Okay. Oh, that's a very good point. So I understand your point of view more now. That makes more sense. See, I think that sometimes the Inquirer reporters lie. I think they really
name
do.
Name one.
Because I think that they tell something that they know is not true and hide behind the ruse.
But you can't name
false prediction.
You can't name an instance. I guarantee you cannot name an instance.
Well, and I agree with you. And actually.
You won't be able to find one.
The case you're making right now is the case that anything that could be even casually construed as journalism can never be yelling fire in a theater. That's the case you're making.
That's correct, right. So, for instance, if suppose you who started Yahoo...
YouTube
or Twitter started a revolution in the United States.
Right.
Would the government be justified in pulling the plug on Twitter?
Fuck those nerds.
Would they?
Yeah, of course.
Why?
Because they're creating a clear and present danger. That's the ethical.
Right.
That's the ethical justification for.
So the answer to the question is yes.
But how do you know that there aren't revolution? There aren't
Well, there are, for sure. Yeah. There's some of that happening.
There are.
May not always be the main platforms doing it, or they're not going to be honest about it, but there's some of that happening. And there are people also using those platforms as soapboxes.
I didn't say eliminate revolutionaries. I said if there were a revolution, if there were an actual revolution. Nobody's fighting in the streets.
We're in a cultural war.
I'm talking about bullets and fire.
But not in a culture war, that's not hot yet.
I'm talking about bullets and fire.
He's making the case that it's subjective.
Yes.
And the fact that anything that could be inside of the... Like, the things... This is speech, and this is also the things that could be journalism. You can't tell. Right? You're making.
No, you can, my opinion is that you can tell a journalistic story.
I agree with that, actually. I think that's right, because I think it really could... Yes, all right, there are... So let's take that down a pair. Let me draw.
Journalism is speech, but not the other way around.
So let's put it this way. This is speech, right? And in the case where speech has who, what, when, where, why, right? That's this.
Yes.
This, the who, what, when, where, why, this part... The people who fulfill those requirements, it's always journalism. That's the case you're making.
Yeah.
Okay, I agree with you.
Good.
I think you're right.
Next question.
Does anyone disagree with this? That this subset is always journalism?
Yeah,
but so that's the not answer, practice. So the answer to this question, this is great. We actually agreed, even though we're all getting mad at each other. We actually are fighting for the same cause, which is that this is journalism, and F you if you want to take it from us. And the answer is we really can't regulate social media, because we can't tell... I mean, we can make them require that people fill out those boxes, maybe that, you know, who, what, when, where, why, you know, fill all the boxes out, or it's not journalism, but once you fill them out, that's it.
But most people, when you say social media, think of Facebook or Twitter or things like that.
But I mean, this may be the who, what, who, what, when, where, why, the five W's, right? Right. If you, who, that's H, idiot. No, wait, no.
They all begin with W.
It's all W. Okay. There's no H. You could also, let's do H in there too. How? Who, what, when, where, why, how? Right? So, if it's all W's and an H in there, right? If you check all those boxes, it's journalism.
So yeah. Wait. So if
in
I
that
would
case,
do...
really, the government's job is making sure you check all those boxes.
No, it's not the government's job.
Well, if you wanted to involve them in it, that would be what... No, so you're saying we shouldn't even involve them?
No, the whole idea of a free press is that the government steps away from involving themselves in that.
Right. I agree with you.
Right. Now, a free press means that you can publish stuff that's not journalism.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, here's an example.
True crime.
And I can back this up, and I'm sure Steve could find it if we look for it, which is... Alex Jones has said in court...
Oh, please.
But the thing is, people were calling him journalists, and people were angry that he was kicked off of Twitter and kicked off of YouTube. And he said, this is journalism, how dare you do this? And he said in court, maybe to cover his own ass, maybe it was true, I'm not a journalist, I'm an entertainer. Right.
Right.
You know,
it's
exactly
kind of like wrestling. It's kind of like wrestling back in the day.
But you know
they
what?
They said we're a sport until they wanted to regulate them.
You could argue about whether it was intent or not, but I would argue he lied. He lied and claimed to be a journalist to protect himself while he was doing something.
Right, because he was claiming a First Amendment right to...
And by the way, that doesn't mean everything he said is untrue. Some of it may
be. But he has a First Amendment right to not be a journalist as well.
Right.
And to say the thing... He has a First Amendment right to claim that he's a journalist.
Right.
But the point is...
So hot.
But the point is that if he's going to create...
I love it.
But if he's going to create, in essence, a riot...
Right.
Right? By having people go to Columbine and whatever and accosting the parents. If he's going to create something like that, the government steps in.
So, all right, here's another thing. So, before, I kind of glossed over it, but I said there's a standard already for this, a clear and present danger. When someone is creating a potentially violent situation where they're ready and they're... about to take action and all the pieces are in place, do we have a right to shut them down for the standard of clearing? But this is
that just happens to that Coast Guard guy.
For instance,
they're gonna have to let him go.
If the Philadelphia shooter wrote a letter saying, I'm gonna do this, here's how I'm gonna do it, here, what, when, where, why, how, of course we would stop him, right?
Right.
We would totally stop them. So, it's clear that if that level of quality is met, that we stop them. So, when do we step in and say, okay, that's not speech, that's fire in a theater? You know, I think the answer is clear and present danger. Does anyone disagree with that or have a better standard?
No.
I think that's it.
Okay. All right. Fuck the government, man. You guys can, we'll do it ourselves.
I can't find evidence supporting what you said.
It was in a Texas court, I'm sure of it.
But I did see from a Texas publication with his attorney saying no reasonable person would believe a single thing that Alex Jones says is true.
That's insane too, because he must have said something true by accident. So that person's just as crazy.
No, but that's his defense attorney.
That doesn't mean that that's what he's believing.
Right, right. Yeah, they're just getting him out of custody. Trouble in this custody battle.
He's saying he's as crazy as he sounds.
And there's going to be lots of those cases throughout history. There's been lots, and there'll be more. So, all right.
All right. No, his lawyer said that in a divorce hearing that he's a performance artist.
Nothing's real until it goes to court, man. I think everybody gets real honest all of a sudden. Yeah. Still, I mean, it's still perjury if you're under oath.
Politicians of both parties have been putting the screws to the press for years because the press doesn't work for them. Their job is to get to the truth. Politicians don't want you to get to the truth.
Their job is to get viewership.
I disagree. Some politicians do want you to get to the truth, but yes, some don't.
The first job,
just like everybody else, some are honest, some are not.
The first job of a government is to stay in power,
right?
And the first job of the press is to get to the truth.
That's a funny thing that you say it that way, because I think the first job of a psychopath is to stay in power.
I don't think that.
Number one,
yeah.
Logic is extremely selfish when you use just logic and no reason and no empathy.
But I think it's starting to come to fruition now, where they have intentionally sowed the seeds of distrust, because this is how most autocratic governments start. They say, forget the press, they're all liars and cheats. Forget these people, because they're all liars and cheats.
Agreed.
Forget those people. Everybody who's against you, and then you just do it one at a time, until all of a sudden it's going to be
What? Because propaganda is just a form of marketing, and marketing is really just about a gray area and getting people to do something that's maybe against their interest. Like Edward Bernays
like
getting women
people
to smoke,
yep,
or getting people to buy cake mix because they put an egg in the damn thing, you know? It's all about tricking people into doing something that maybe isn't in their interest. You know, you don't really need to buy that much stuff.
Right.
You know, you could have been a little pickier. You could have been a little cheaper. You could have waited a little longer.
But people do need tank monitors.
They do need tank.
Yes.
You absolutely need tank monitors. You don't want the oil company ripping you off. That's the one exception. No, that was really great, guys. I appreciate
it. What do you do when the media, or the news media, supports a certain agenda?
And well, so
switch media.
You want the absolute worst case of how I think this is all going to end up, or the best case, or both?
In reference to
the news media trying to manipulate people. Right. Let's say that's true, that they're trying to manipulate people.
They are.
And they're trying to get them. Well, of course to some degree they are, right? Because they're trying to manipulate people to stay tuned so they can sell you soap. You know, so they can.
I think people also confuse the opinion shows. Like if you look at a Rachel Maddow or what's his name on Fox? I can't remember his name.
Hmm.
Which one?
Oh, don't get me started on the fairness doctrine.
Well, I those people are not news. They are opinion.
I'm not happy with Reagan lovers, I got to tell you, because, you know, Reagan's cabinet signed away the Fairness Doctrine. You know, the Fairness Doctrine was an anti-Nazi propaganda piece of rulemaking,
yep,
and I can't believe we got rid of it. That's insanity to me. And you know who it was who pushed that? Reagan was the one that signed it, and Rush Limbaugh was the one who pushed it. And that guy made a huge mistake, I think, because actually he's the one who's suffering under it now.
Right.
Because, Rush, because he had a news show. He was one of the people pushing for the get rid of the Fairness Doctrine, and the reason why is because he had a news show, and he just wanted to talk about his opinion. He didn't want to have to give the counterpoint. The way the Fairness Doctrine worked is he had to give a counterpoint.
Right.
He didn't like giving a counterpoint. Point.
He does. He gives counterpoints all the time.
I know,
because
but he didn't like that he was required to give a counterpoint.
But if I'm running a show, why would
and
I?
And that's what
give
the law said. We really should have kept it in place, because if you just keep pounding one side of an argument into someone's head, they just believe it after
so
a while.
But it's a weakness
of how human brains work.
But there's other media. Go listen to NPR.
But people don't do that.
They
people,
do it too. And, the skeptical side is that one side will eventually accumulate enough power and crush the other side. Doesn't matter which side you're on of any particular argument, right? It's all about the network, and you have the momentum, and you can just, you know, we've got all the money, we've got all the channels, we're going to kill you and make you think what we think, you know, mentally kill you and make you think what we think.
No, that's not true.
But
there's so many people
that
just watch, let's say, Fox, or they just watch MSNBC.
Right.
But they're not getting the truth. They're getting kind of half the truth on one side or the other. And that's why we're so polarized.
No.
The truth lies
somewhere
in the
middle. Bring the fairness doctrine back.
No.
Yeah, so the counter argument is that the market will always solve it. Huh. This is the optimist point of view. That no matter what, and actually, we're starting to see that. The market is starting to solve it. You know, a lot of people are taking a lot of internet channels and a lot of internet discussions. Like, this is, I don't know if this is going to get the viewership, but I mean, I take this very seriously. This is these are adult professionals using their life experience and their education to try to solve real problems that are being caused by technocrats and technocracy. You know, and this is serious stuff, man. I mean, we're kind of joking and laughing, and I'm trying to make it fun and silly, but this is heavy stuff. So you have stuff like this. You have stuff like, the walled garden. And nobody talked about it, but I was constantly on about the Web 2.5 and the Web 3.0 technology stuff. You know, enough Web 2.5 technology stuff comes along. That's basically right now the way people are implementing it is people are putting things, add-ons into browsers. They're peeking over the wall, Kilroy style, you know. And there's a few good ones out there, and there's going to be more good ones. And the market is solving it. They're saying, you know, walled gardens. We don't care about you, Facebook. We don't care about you, Twitter. We're going to work around you. So the market could find a solution if it's allowed to give the chance. So that's the optimist point of view. The truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Yeah, the media can do some damage in the meantime while people get used to repeating a pattern that's bad for them. But also, if we could just buy more time, maybe the market will find a solution. Does that make sense? Okay, yeah.
Does the fairness doctrine mean that we have to put up with the earth is flat?
Well, what would happen in the case of the fairness doctrine is somebody would, I mean, you know, the non-Rush Limbaugh argument against it, the reason that media didn't like it is because that meant everything you said could theoretically be applied under the fairness doctrine, but this is why it was a policy and not a law, and the FCC implemented it. So theoretically, you could have to come up with a counterpoint to every single goddamn thing you said,
right.
But nobody was going to seriously make the earth
flat. I think we're giving these flat people, these flat earthers, too much airtime, and like, why should we talk about them?
There's thousands of them.
So what? Who cares?
Right. Well, that's. I mean, I just talked about it because it just drives me crazy that nobody talks about that MIT experiment more. But yes, agreed. Yeah.
Don't talk about them. Don't give them any.
Well, you know, it's a combination of give it a little airtime with a solid, concise counterpoint, and then drop it.
Right.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
you can't make people be smarter than they are.
But the point is, that was Alex Jones's that was the situation he found himself in.
Mm-hmm.
The fairness doctrine, in a sort of bastardized way, allows him to say things that are completely antithetical to both history and common sense.
I think he was always exempt from it because he wasn't, since it's an FCC rule, he wasn't on broadcast TV. He could just say whatever crazy crap he wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the TV stations had to say, and you know what? At that point, in 87, when the Fairness Doctrine was still in place, I don't know if Alex Jones was around, but let's suppose he was.
No, he wasn't.
But let's suppose the Fairness Doctrine was lifted in 98, right? And that Alex Jones was on the same time as the Fairness Doctrine. If someone came to me and said, CNN is a better news source than Alex Jones, I would say, objectively, yes, because CNN has to use the fairness doctrine when they report things, and Alex Jones does not. But that's no longer the case.
Yeah.
So that bothers the crap out of me. That's why I think that was, you know, if it was a mainstream enough counterpoint. You still kind of get this binary division. We can get the Hegelian dialectic, but, you know.
Somebody like Alex Jones is I mean, he's actually dangerous. Didn't some guy walk into a pizza place with a shotgun?
Because
he thought there was a pedophile ring.
People were posting pictures of basement tunnels and stuff, and he thought it was real.
Right.
You know, and the thing is, like, you know,
I'm going to investigate this for myself.
Right, right. He probably should have investigated without the shotgun and
right.
looked with his eyeballs.
You know, I never heard of this story.
Yeah, there was a so there was this whole thing. So when the Podesta emails broke, there was definitely a code going back and forth between the Democrats. I don't see why anybody's arguing that, and nobody seriously argued that with me when I say it that way. Of course they have a code, because it's freaking email. Why are you going to talk about everything in the open? So some people theorize that code was this, like, kind of underground network of people doing illicit things with children, and that Comet Pizza was right in the middle of it. James Alifantis owned Comet Pizza, and that he was part of the middle of this thing. So people started posting pictures online of underground tunnels underneath the business. You couldn't tell it was Comet Pizza. But he was like, okay, that just proves it. You know, that just shows you that this is true and that they're trafficking in children. So he showed up at Comet Pizza with a shotgun, you know, because he was positive that that was true. But that's silly. You know, that doesn't mean that it's positive. Just because they're using a secret code, you know, they're arguably half the political structure of the country. Why wouldn't they use a secret code to talk to each other through email? Because, you know, if anything, the problem is they didn't do enough.
Yeah.
You know, because their emails got popped. Some of it was plain text, as we saw in hindsight. You know, so, yeah, I mean, it's gonna happen. People are gonna yell fire when you let these people run amok, sometimes they're gonna run fire. You know, they're gonna yell fire in a theater. It's gonna happen. All right, so it sounds like nay on the computer science. We got one more thing, and then we're going to close for the night. Do you guys have any tips for a budding computer science student?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Learn how to do research. Learn how to get a question and do the research to find the answer, rather than just assuming that you can't find it.
Okay.
Learn how to think logically.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah. Take logic classes.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Logic classes.
Make sure you love it, because it's not a 9-to-5 job.
God.
And you like to read a lot.
That's a very good one. Yeah, yeah.
But try out different topics. You know, I did DBA work. I do networking now. You know, try out different. Try out server administration, network administration, DBA. Try out all different types of. Being an IT is like being a doctor. It's a specialty. We all have our specialties. And people come up to me thinking I could fix things. I say, no, I have no idea how that thing works.
Yeah, my wife all the time will call me up. She'll be like, I need help with Adobe Illustrator. I'm like,
what the fuck is that?
I can't even draw a stick figure.
I can draw a stick figure. Not much else, but I can draw stick figures.
No, but I use the analogy. I mean, you won't, if you have a heart issue, you won't go to a podiatrist. You go to a cardiologist.
Right,
right.
You know, that's how our business is now.
Okay. So you mean, like, when you're talking about people specializing, how will that help the comp sci student?
Well, they specialize into a specific field.
Right.
Yeah, but when you're learning, try different out. Try working with servers. When you're beginning.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Don't just pigeonhole yourself in the beginning.
Try the whole gamut of the IT of computers,
right.
Programming, DBA, whatever.
So I can definitely back that up. Originally, I was going to be a video game programmer on Windows.
Right.
You're
going
to do what?
I was going to be a Windows video game programmer.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, and then somebody showed me Linux and I went, what? You know, and then it all got weird. And then I ended up being a Linux admin instead of a Windows video game programmer. But that was the plan. That's why I was taking computer science, because I could become, so I could improve my programming skills so that I could go into video games. Which, of course, would have been complete suicide. Those guys are abused worse than postdocs.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't go into video games if you love it, but like Joe said, you better love it.
Yeah.
Oh, and see, another thing is, where do you make the most money that you enjoy doing?
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, you got. Well, it's the usual thing, right? So you got. Are you good at it?
Right.
Do you like it? Will it make you money?
Right.
Will it make you
money? Are all three of those things true?
Is there a future doing it? Is it going to go away?
Oh yeah, yeah. Will how will the technology trends affect you?
Right.
Right.
Well, is it coming or going?
And you always have to be learning, because what you enter the industry with and what you job you're doing when you leave the industry are probably going to be two extremely different things.
So this is kind of a little bit off for Arnie, although I think Arnie would probably agree that you must know computers in your field, in the engineering field, for sure. You may not have to be a computer scientist, but you have to be able to get around.
The way physics undergrads were taught when I was in school was you sort of had these lab assignments in which you learned to program in C because it was a tool.
Right.
And so you just ended up doing that, and it was just one of the things. It was just another tool that you used. I mean, right. If I were telling somebody that was like a high school student that was interested in computer science, I would say learn Python.
Yeah, Python.
Absolutely.
For sure, all of the Chinese scientists, all the scientists coming who are trained and coming out of China, who are moving to the United States to do science, know Linux. Also, that's the other one too. Yes. They all know Linux. Yeah. So, you know, some know it kind of, some know it a lot, but they all know it at least somewhat.
And you know why? This is my theory of Russian mathematicians during the Cold War.
Yes.
Why are all these great Russian mathematicians sprouting up during the Cold War? They're all great minds. They could have become experimental physicists. But what are they going to work with? They had nothing.
Yeah. Right.
So all these great mathematicians became great mathematicians.
That's right.
Because they could, with a pencil and paper.
Right. Yep. There's a great Einstein quote about this. My paper is my laboratory.
Yeah.
Dead bang on. So
Linux is free and open source. You can modify it yourself. They couldn't buy Windows, so they went to something that they could work on.
You mean maybe they weren't copying Windows?
Right. Well, yeah, I'm sure.
Which just didn't have the source.
Right. So
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, Windows or Rindos or something. No, I was talking about knock. Well, yes, of course, there's plenty of pirating. This is a huge political row between the countries. Piracy. But there's also knockoffs, too. Yeah. There's both. I mean, Windows, theoretically, you could make a Linux distro with Wine and make it look like Windows and call it a knockoff name.
Right.
And there would be people who wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
You're right.
Any other tips or advice? No. So what do you guys think about the format? Is this a good format? Did you have fun?
I enjoyed this.
I liked it.
I wish I knew I was going to be on.
I wish I knew, too. We're full of surprises. That's the Technocrat Live, people. We never know what's going to happen. Well, thank you all for being on.
Thank you for having us.
And it's been a lot of fun, and I hope to do this again, and I hope you guys will be on future panels, although maybe we'll need a bigger table.
Yeah.
And next time I'll come early.
Yeah, and please come on the show. We'll have a good time. All right, thanks a lot, and thank you so much for watching the Technocrat Live and your great questions, and we'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.